And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here, and declare your independence from me, Ernest Hancock. Ernest Hancock, I know my name. I know. Here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Ooh, that's a good one. Okay, what we're going to do today in the first hour, we have J. Neil Shulman is coming on to give us a recap of the gun rights policy conference he went to this weekend. And we saw an opportunity to do a bunch of DVDs. So we did 500 DVDs, you know, of a compilation of Jews for Preservation of Firearm Ownership has a list of movies that were awesome. Now, we knew Aaron Zellman from the 90s, and he passed away a few years ago. And eventually, JPFO, Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, was taken over by SAF, Second Amendment Foundation, Alan Gottlieb, and we've known of them for a while also. The thing that was unique about Aaron is they took the Nazi Gun Control Act in the 1930s, and they compared it with the United States Gun Control Act of 67, 68, around in there. And it was right after RFK got killed, when Robert Kennedy was killed. It was easy to pass. I mean, you don't let a good tragedy go to waste kind of thing. And so they passed this, and you compared it, and they did a book that you had the German version on one side, and the other side was the English translation, and I think they did it in English or something, the German version, and you could compare the two, and they were the same. One of the attorneys that was in the Nuremberg trials became a congressman later, and he goes, "Well, I know where to get some good gun control. Let's go to the Nazis," you know? So Aaron made a big, and it was like never again. So they're like, you know, it was amazing to him and a lot of people how Jews were primarily seen as advocating gun control. And he goes, "Why? How the hell you think we've wound up on the cattle cars? I mean, you know, seriously." So he was definitely a no compromiser. L. Neil Smith, which is a good friend of mine, and J. Neil's, he did a couple of books with Aaron, you know, that were novels that kind of depicted, you know, why guns are good. And so when Aaron passed away, and we had him scheduled for a Freedom Summit one time, and he wasn't able to make it because right after 9/11, he's supposed to be at our first one, I think. And when 9/11 hit, all of a sudden they started doing the anal probe, and he goes, "This definitely Nazi Germany, okay? This is, hell no, I am not flying." And we offered to even have people that were driving from across the country to go to the summit, you know, to pick them up, do whatever we could. And he was just like, "Nope, not doing it. Not doing it. Wouldn't be prudent at this juncture." All right. You know, he had his principles. So it was no compromise organization. So these films were very, very, very well done. And it was all different issues. One was called No Guns for Negroes, when it was all about, you know, freed slaves and how gun control came up to give the sheriff the ability to who does and doesn't get a permit. And, you know, it seems like all the black people don't get guns, you know, kind of thing. And then No Guns for Jews, that was obviously a popular one. The Gang, which is about the BATF, you know, and then some Second Amendment constitutional histories. I mean, a lot of really good stuff. So we took a compilation disc and we made this under the Second Amendment for Everyone. and then made thousands of them and gave them out right after Sandy Hook, because we knew it was going to go after high-capacity magazines for ARs and so on. We'll go, really? Okay, you guys want to play? Really? You want to play? You want to go play with the legislature? We'll go, no. I'll show you what you do. You make thousands of these DVDs and explain it to them. And where'd we put them? You know? In South Phoenix. You know, in the minority communities and different, you know, clubs and everything. Tea parties and Occupies and all that kind of, you know, we're going to get educated in Arizona. Well, Jay Neal had an opportunity to pass out his movie Alongside Night, which he's the author of the book and director of the movie. And so they were going to let him, because it's kind of a gun-oriented, friendly, you know, movie. So they're putting Blu-rays on all the chairs and so on. He worked out a deal. Hey, if you can get movies, we'll go, done! Boom! Within a couple hours, had it done, because we'd be rock and roll and whatnot. Had some volunteers came over. Donna took it down. They put it out there. Or so we're told. So that's what we, you know, we want to get a follow-up on the event itself and the speech that Jay Neal had with Alan Corwin, you know, popular, well-known gun laws book writer. So, Jay Neal, that introduction, tell me everything that happened.
Well, I have been to two conventions, recently, one in August and one over this past weekend. The one in August was the World Science Fiction Convention, SASQAN, in Spokane, Washington. And again, I was there to show. I was actually we screened Alongside Night at that convention. Not, you know, not what we did at this one, where we put copies of the movie on everybody's seat. So that was one difference. But you know, another difference is that at the Gun Rights Policy Conference in Phoenix, you didn't have guys, you know, walking around in huge costumes saying, "I am Groot." You know, but there was something in common that struck me. At the opening session of the Gun Rights Policy Conference on Saturday, we all put our hands over our hearts.
Yeah, pledge allegiance!
But listen to this. We pledged our allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And after we did that, I realized that it was, after all, a science fiction convention.
Okay. So at the science fiction convention, this one, they opened it up with the Pledge of Allegiance?
Yes. The Saturday session opened up with the Pledge of Allegiance, yes.
No, I mean at the science fiction thing.
Oh, no. At the Gun Rights Policy Conference.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying that the Pledge of Allegiance is what made this a science fiction.
Got it. I was just wondering the comment.
Because as far as I can tell, I'm not living in a republic with liberty and justice for all.
No, it would be hard to make that case at the United Nations. Obama tried, though. We'll talk about that maybe in the third hour. By the way, in the second hour, Chris Odom's coming on from StashCrypto.com. It's open transactions. It's a secret bazaar of we're going to do the money and kind of another wave of blockchain going to whip ass. So, you know, that'll be interesting. Stick around for that. And Keith Cernick has been a friend of the show. He's coming by. He's been traveling around the country and so on. So he'll talk about that. We'll have a break in about a minute here, and then we'll get down to the meat of the event. But
if you don't mind, I want to take that minute to say that I was really proud to get the opportunity. And by the way, I had to sort of like, you know, sneak past the organizers to get a copy of the Zelman made movies on all the seats. We did that. We got it out to everybody there. They were actually going to shut down that ballroom at 4 o'clock, and Donna showed up at around 10 minutes after that. And so we had to use a little counter-economic operation there in order to sneak in and get all those copies of the hardcore JPFO stuff on all the seats.
Well, thank you. I mean, we were glad to do it, but they didn't do it for nothing. I mean, you know, get them rock and roll and whatnot. I'm just wondering, you know, after SAF took, JPFO was the crap, man. I mean, they were it. Yeah, Gun Owners of America, we know Larry Pratt well. He spoke at our summit, and he's spoken here in Phoenix at SAFE events before, along with Sheriff Mack and so on. But, you know, and they do pretty good. NRA is kind of ew. But I tell you, JPFO, no quarter given, man. They're like, no, 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 hardcore. And we're going to talk about SAF, Second Amendment Foundation, taking them over. And what they do, just get a database? I mean, are they using any of their stuff? I was kind of surprised.
Well, according to Julianne,
the music's going. We'll talk more with Jay Neal about the Second Amendment Foundation conference when we come back.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda. But now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
Want gold, but also want to stay digital and decentralized on the Bitcoin blockchain? Anthem Vault, providing trusted, world-class vaulting, has your answer with Hayek Gold. Digital, spendable gold inspired by economist and free market philosopher F.A. Hayek. Each Hayek is worth 1 gram of gold and is available right now at AnthemVault.com. Sign up today at AnthemVault.com with promo code FREEDOM to earn 6 months of free storage and 5% off all margins for life. Hayek Gold at AnthemVault.com. Get yours today.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Well, where am I going to drive my Tesla Model X that comes out tonight? Damn it. Oh, this is... Finally, I am so sick. I just had to change the alternator in one of Montero's last week. You know, I'm just going, you know, that I you know, more crap. Is there an alternator on an electric car? No. So this is... is there a fuel pump on electric... No. Is there an air filter? No. Is there oil change? No. Is there vacuum leaks? No. Is there a radiator that leaks? No. Starters? No. I'm just, just in the maintenance side. I go, see, what's wrong with it? It's the ignition switch, the wire, the battery, the motor. I mean, you know, I mean, how many things can go wrong? So I'm just going, so tonight, Model X is coming out. FYI. All right. We're back to Jay Neal and his experience at the Gun Policy Conference. Tell us every little old thing about your presentation. You know, one thing I did want to ask, though, Jay Neal, was there any ode to JPFO there at all other than the DVDs?
Yes, well, there was also on the seats put out there was order forms for JPFO materials. Now, you might find this distinction interesting. You talked about how Second Amendment Foundation had taken over JPFO. That's not quite, you know, specifically true.
Got their database.
Well, they got their database. But basically, when I was asking Julianne Versnell whether the JPFO DVDs should go on the stack of materials that Second Amendment Foundation itself was giving out to everybody, the stack of books, Julianne told me no, that is only for Second Amendment Foundation and Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms materials, that JPFO was a separate organization and therefore it needed to go not on the book stack but on the seats along with my copy, you know, along with the copies we were giving out of the alongside my Blu-ray DVD.
Good! Project. Good. I wanted to get them out. I didn't want to, you know. And
when Alan Gottlieb saw them, I told him that you were the ones who had provided them, and he told me specifically to thank you and Donna for them.
Well, he's very welcome, and I'm glad that we were able to do that because that is, you know, I A lot of people don't know those movies exist. I mean, they are awesome.
They are awesome.
History.
I haven't seen them in a very long time, and when I got home, I stuck in the DVD and was watching them yesterday as I was recovering from my journey with my swollen feet up in my recliner. Those movies are awesome.
Whenever they piss me off, any Second Amendment kind of, I said, really? Really? I am so going to kick your butt with education. Watch these and tell me you're not moved. I mean,
these videos, particularly the one "No Guns for Jews," where you're seeing a rabbinical discussion of the failures of all the American Jews to support self-defense and firearms. The mullahs of Iran have to understand that when it comes to Jew hating, they're just amateurs. If you really want to get into Jew hating, you gotta call a Jew to do it.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't real super contentious, but it was. Aaron did have. See, a lot of people depicted the Jewish faith and the Jewish voting bloc as being anti-gun, and even as a kid, I never understood that.
The video "No Guns for Jews" points out the irony of American Jews that are proud as hell when they see an Israeli, Defense Force soldier with a gun or other high powered weaponry, but guns are not for us. Excuse me? Excuse me?
You know, that point is, it's an abdication. It's like a sheep, appreciative of the shepherd taking care of them or something. And Aaron definitely did not have that attitude. And I was
the best part of it is all the references in Jewish law, in Torah and Talmud, to the right to self-defense, to specifically the right to use deadly force in self-defense or defense of the innocent.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not like, the history of the Jews is all about defense either, but it certainly included the.
It makes a very strong point, even stronger than the comparison of the text of gun control laws in Germany and in the United States. The most important case that it makes is that if Jews had not given up their guns, then when Kristallnacht came, they would have been able to respond in more than a victim role. And it might have, if not stopped the Holocaust, it might have made the Holocaust very expensive for the Germans, and who knows how that might have slowed them down.
You know, the one thing, Kristallnacht is German for the Night of Broken Glass.
Night of Broken Glass, yeah.
And what that was it was the culmination of an attitude that had been built up. I mean, you can go back and forth about, what happened and why and who and what and blah, 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 blah. Bottom line is that the rank and file walking down the street Jew was in peril of his life, because an atmosphere had been created from the top. And we've seen this, get our own version of that when it's, anti-immigrant protest or anti-Islam mosque going to do kind of 9/11 something protest, or as you can just see that it's kind of allowed, it's kind of encouraged. It's kind of the politicians ride the wave,
You're looking at it from the Nazi standpoint here. Let's look at it from the standpoint of the German Jew, because this is really where the comparisons to the United States become very, very insidious. Okay, you had Jews in Germany who had served honorably in the German military during World War I, and they thought of themselves primarily not as Jews. They thought of themselves primarily as Germans, as German citizens. And so they were more than happy that when the German law was passed under the Weimar Republic, before Hitler came to power, when they were told by the government to register their guns and provide paperwork to the government, they, as good upstanding German citizens, law-abiding gun owners, they were more than happy to fill out that that paperwork.
Which is, I've heard that exact same thing from the NRA. When they took the Sporter or whatever it was, the SKS Sporters that they had in Southern California, they go, well, get a receipt for the takings, because the government was given $300. First they wanted you to register it. You know, when they did the assault weapon ban in the state of Arizona, this is where Boxer Feinstein came from. You know, they were state senators or something, or legislators, and they became U.S. senators. And they were big on this gun control thing. Well, they couldn't class, it was a detachable magazine, black, you know, pistol grip, kind of, you know, it had all these little points that would go on it. Well, the SKS, which shoots the same rounds as an AK-47, you know, does a stripper clip, and it's a fixed magazine, and it looks like a rifle, and does the same thing, it just looked different. So then they go, damn it, we can't really classify that one. So then they said, well, okay, it's kind of legal. Then they get a new attorney general. Well, I say it's not legal, back and forth. Finally, they go, register. So they register. Then they go, thanks for the registration. Now we're confiscating. This actually happened in the late 90s, okay? When they did that, we had safe, second amendment for everyone, safe storage. Put it here, and we'll store it for you. Okay, when we come back, I want to, you know, get right to the presentation, you know, on how it went with you and Alan.
Very good.
All right, we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Radio.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Checking out this open transaction, you know, Stash Inc., blockchain technology of Anonymous. I get to do the, that's going to be fun next hour. But we got to finish up here, man. But Jay Neal, you still haven't told me about your presentation, how it was taken by the hundreds. How many people were there?
There was over 500 people there. I know that because when I lined up for lunch, they were out of sandwiches before I got to the front of the line.
Oh, glad you weren't at the front. Tell me about the presentation, okay?
I had an agenda different from anybody else I was seeing on the written agenda. There were people there. You had lawyers like Alan Gura, who was very, very successful in litigating the Second Amendment in the courts. You had various national and local groups talking about how they were working to lobby in the legislature and again do court actions in defense of legal rights of gun owners. I had a different agenda. This was the gun rights policy conference, and guns being inanimate objects don't have rights. So let's parse that and say it's the RKBA, the right to keep and bear arms, as part of an overall set of rights which were stated most eloquently in the Declaration of Independence signed by the Continental Congress. So I started out by talking about the battle between illegal gun owners and the police on the Old North Bridge in Concord, Massachusetts on April 19, 1775. Mm. And my opening point, and I addressed this specifically to Sheriff David Clark, who appears both in an NRA commercial and as a frequent spokesman on the Fox News Channel, I said, Sheriff David Clark, I have bad news for you. This country was founded by cop killers.
Ooh. I've heard that before. Like, Al Neal would kind of say stuff like that. You know, you guys are
Did I plagiarize my friend again?
You're nasty, nasty. You know, it's been a common thing. I've heard it. I don't know where it started. Hell, probably started with you. But, you know, the thing is this country founded by cop killers, man. It's a hard truth, but yeah, okay.
Then after that, I pivoted, a couple of centuries later, when, according to federal law, on jetliners, and by the way, it was different back, you could still see movies, you know, made in the 1940s and 1950s, in which people are carrying handguns on commercial flights. I pointed out that on September 11th, 2001, when federal law made it illegal for passengers, flight attendants, and flight crew to be armed, that 16 jihadi militiamen, four per airplane, armed with nothing but box cutters, was able to take over these aircraft, crash two of them into the financial headquarters of the United States, the Twin Towers, one into the military headquarters of the United States, the Pentagon, and on the one flight where disarmed passengers organized a resistance, the jihadi militiamen failed to hit their target, and that plane went down in a field near Shanksville, Pennsylvania.
So they say.
But my point was, the 3,000 lives that died on September 11th, the lives that followed in our response in Afghanistan, Iraq, and other wars, the trillions of dollars spent, the creation of a wounded warrior class was directly a result of gun control. And so my second point was, gun control gave us 9/11.
Okay.
So,
did you go first or Alan?
Alan went first. There's no sense even talking as if it was a panel. We each gave discrete presentations. You know, we were just called up to the stage at the same time. That's the only thing that was really
going
on.
What was Alan's presentation? Be nice to the media or what?
Look, you know, Alan always gives, you know, a good professional presentation. But like almost everybody else there, he uses the language which appeals to the right wing. Okay? To me, the Second Amendment, like, is indivisible. Here's where the indivisible, where the Pledge of Allegiance really gets important. The Second Amendment is indivisible from all of the other rights listed in the Bill of Rights. You take one, you take them all. And so I was speaking on behalf of all of the Bill of Rights, okay? I was pointing out that Republicans talk about the right to work, but then they want to build walls and keep out workers. I was pointing out that Republicans believe in absolute human rights only for the unborn, but those of us who are now breathing only get those rights which are licensed to us from the government, and that they talk about law-abiding gun owners, i.e., those who meekly comply with thousands of tyrannical laws and regulations. And then I made a legal argument. I said, I am here to speak for the primary legal document of this country. It's not the Constitution, it's the Declaration of Independence, that in terms of controlling legality, the Declaration of Independence signed by the Continental Congress is still the highest controlling legal authority, with the Constitution and the Bill of Rights coming in second. I said, federal law still reflects this. In Title 18, United States Code, Section 242, which says that any official, state, local, or federal, who violates constitutionally protected rights is acting as a criminal and has no authority. You can deduce my position about what response is permissible in defense of your human rights under the controlling legal document and federal law, and it's not meet compliance.
Well, how was your presentation taken by the audience?
Well, that's where my big surprise came in. I mean, I walked up to that stage realizing that it was an audience which was concealed carrying. I didn't see any open carry, but I knew there was a lot of concealed carry, and there were a lot of law enforcement officers and military in that audience. You know, ex-military, veterans, and active. And I thought, I'll be lucky if I get off this stage alive with what I'm about to say. And instead, Alan Corwin was the first to shake my hand, and then for the rest of the conference, people are coming up to me telling me how much they appreciated my remarks.
And, you know, not a lot of times you'll hear this kind of hardcore. The one thing that really kind of, I remember there was one of L. Neal's sayings. It goes like, is it interesting, do you ever notice all the people that are so for animal rights don't care about human rights?
And I make the point that on the left, those who are for animal rights and the rights of the planet Gaia, and those on the right who talk about the rights of the unborn, are basically making the same sorts of expansionary arguments, where they want to extend human rights to the things that are not precisely active, living, breathing human beings. And I need to point out that the accepted right-wing religious position that the human rights begin at conception is not the original Hebrew position. The original Hebrew position is inspiration, that human rights and human life begins with the intake of the first breath. That's what inspire means.
Okay. Well, you know, it's that's a good point, but my thing has always been that it's cognitive dissonance. It's like they're holding a bunch of different ideas in their head that aren't compatible with each other. That's what makes you insane, you know? And certainly when it comes to politics. So I really think that's a good point. As adamantly as they would fight for the rights of animals or unborn or inanimate objects or, you know, the earth or anything else, but humans, it's like a cloak.
This is your Robertson Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. In early trading Monday, gold is $15 lower at $1,132 per ounce. Silver is down 50 cents at $14.66 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at $237. This is a great time to buy on the dips. We have plenty of silver spiders, Britannias, and kangaroos in stock. Give us a call at 800-874-9760 or visit us online at rrbi.co.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
From the lies.
To break free from your lies.
Okay, so we get some truth, I would imagine, at this conference. Second Amendment Foundation Gun Rights Policy Conference. Tell me, J. Neal, was it... you know, proud to be an American and vote GOP or what?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that if you were to, you know, probably, you know, get a show of hands, you'd be seeing, you know, a bunch of Republicans more than anything else. However, we were being podcast by the Polite Society podcast. You can go on to YouTube right now, and if you look up Gun Rights Policy Conference 2015, the entire sessions are on YouTube right now from the Polite Society podcast. There's also going to be the Sunday session, which is going on C-SPAN, and I was part of the Sunday session, which means I'm going to be on C-SPAN with my hardcore radical position.
Well, and, tell me about Alan Corwin's presentation. What was he talking about?
To tell you the truth, I was so nervous and focused on my presentation, I wasn't really paying attention to my fellow panelists.
Yeah, Alan always does a good job, but you know, he's better at a presentation than being challenged on things because you'll say stuff.
But again, you know, Alan, like everybody else, you know, was basically, you know, talking to people who already agreed with him. Okay, I was attempting to do outreach. I was assuming that I was speaking to a larger audience out there, and so I was pointing out that there is no authority in the Constitution. Pardon me. No authority in the Constitution, no enumerated powers for the federal government to have a DEA or an FDA. Or the word drug is nowhere in the Constitution.
Oh, like they care, you know,
but here's my point. My point is I was making a legal argument that anything which is abhorrent to the Constitution, any law which isn't authorized by the Constitution, regardless of whether, you know, the nine-robed men and women of the Supreme Court, you know, put their blessing on it, put their papal blessing on it, okay? Despite that, it is, if it is anathema to the Constitution, these laws are illegal. They're void ab initio. That's the legal phrase I was looking
from
for.
The
void
beginning.
Ab initio.
From
void
beginning.
From the beginning.
The,
are not binding. And therefore, that drug selling gangs in the inner cities have as much Second Amendment rights as anybody in that room.
Well, that was a thing that we came up against in the mid-90s, 93, 95, called Project Lead. And it was an attempt to enable line officers to take guns away from gang members. This is all part of that Clinton thing.
And right, and you see, that's exactly the point.
Let me finish. I got the button. Let me finish the point. Their Project Lead was going after gangs, and there was an ability for them to get that into our law and law enforcement through Sheriff Arpaio. That was a big deal, and it wasn't even supposed to be Arizona. It was supposed to be, you know, Detroit and Atlanta and L.A. and New York and that kind of thing. And all of a sudden, he volunteered Arizona to come in. So SAFE went after this. We did articles on it. We hammered it. We interviewed BATF here and in Washington. And the bottom line was, whenever a law enforcement comes in contact with a gun in the populace, they register the firearm. They get the serial number. They do a background check on it. All the, this stuff was, and it just worshipped by, you know, the lead law and order guys, you know, in the Republican NRA kind of thing. And these organizations, at first they have to kowtow to the media, the GOP, the political process. So for Jay Neal to get up there and go at a rights thing, fundamental questions like, you know, life and the Declaration of Independence and the role of the Constitution, Bill of Rights, that was to have a major impact on them, you know, from their ground seat of how they think about the issue. Did anybody come up to you expressing those kinds of thoughts?
It was too new. You know, ideas like this, when you first hear them, take a while to sink in, and it's not gonna happen in the first few minutes. It's gonna happen over the course of weeks and months when you look into the applications, and maybe when you're watching the news, you see things differently. But I also pointed out Hollywood's role in this, because if you look at the primetime network schedules for the major television networks, it's cops, 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 cops. Okay, Hollywood, all they want to talk about, like Harvey Weinstein, all they want to talk about is how evil guns are in private hands. But they are more than happy to have guns in the hands of cops and military, basically enforcing their vision for their socialist slash fascist slash totalitarian Orwellian state. Okay, they want that power to be centralized in law and order, in police agency, in police power, as much as any law and order right winger. Hollywood is conservative in the sense that they are statist.
Yeah, conserve the state. It's not about conserving rights, really.
It's not about conserving the Declaration of Independence. It's about they love all of the grants of power to the government, and they hate the rights which are reserved to the people, which is why there is less litigation on Ninth and Tenth Amendment issues than there are on any of the other Bill of Rights, except possibly the Third Amendment.
And Third Amendment, is that quartering soldiers or something?
That's quartering soldiers, yeah.
You know, everybody's saying all the rights have been stripped except that one. I go, yeah? What do you think happened to the neighbors of the guys at Waco? Well, they said,
If you want to actually talk about Third Amendment cases, post 9/11, there have been cases where people's houses are taken over, or their apartments are taken over, so there can be active surveillance on people who are, you know, supposedly running meth labs or building terrorist bombs or something
I
like that.
I just had,
and that's quartering, so they've managed even to violate that one.
Yeah, no, and that's the point I made. You know, just this weekend, I was at a party, and there's one of the neighbors of the people, they said this home used to be some, I don't know, had bad guy drug dealing rented to somebody until they, you know, sold it. They had got a call from federal marshals that said, hey, can you be out in 10 minutes? Should, you know, over the next week or two, we need to kind of, you know, don't tell your neighbor, you know. And they came in, took over their, gave them, you know, a 5-10 minute warning. You know, had them get out, took over their home, and entered the other home from all points and over the fence and the backyard and all that. So this this happens, you know, and I'm wondering if you could say no. Well, of course you can't say no. That'd be pounding on your head. So, you know, I'm just, I'm not feeling comfortable about direction, but it's a philosophy. It's the way people think about this stuff.
Right. So anyway, the point I was making is that Hollywood is on the same side as the law-abiding people who simply want us to go along with what the courts say and what the legislators say. And no, we did not have lives, fortunes, and sacred honor for that generation and generations since then, preserving these rights only at in our current day, to let it slip away and go back to the culture from which we escaped.
Well, these attendees, are they're going to save America? 500 people, you know, I mean, 500 people here in Phoenix, Arizona, coming at, you know, a gun rights policy conference and say we're going to change the policy and be a policy.
Well, they all walked away with DVDs, with the JPFO videos on it. They all walked away with a whole bunch of really good books put out by the Second Amendment Foundation, and they all walked away with a copy of the Alongside Night Blu-ray DVD combo pack, of which Disc 3 has, by the way, our previous shows. And the two first discs, director's commentary, have you, your voice on there interviewing me. And on the third disc, we have digital copies of the original Alongside Night novel and the graphic novel and the full audio book and musical selections. And the point is, they have the intellectual ammo and the cultural ammo that they need. And there was an order form in bulk for anybody who wanted their club to start using this for fundraising. And I really think that Alongside Night is the tip of the spear of defending gun rights right now.
Hey, you know, Keith Cernick just came in. You were at this event?
I did stop by after my volleyball on Sunday morning.
Oh, yeah? Did you get to see Jay Neal speak?
No, I wish I would have.
Well, were there a lot of people there?
It seemed like it was packed. This is Sunday morning, of course, and I was out there on the display tables. That was pretty cool. Check that out.
So there was a lot of good stuff there. You got some goodies?
Oh, yeah. It was almost as good as the Freedom Phoenix conferences.
Oh, score! Okay, it's good. Okay. Hey, thanks for coming on, Jay Neal, getting us caught up. We'll look forward to seeing that and getting the links to put up on Freedom's Phoenix of your C-SPAN.
Every once in a while, you get in for...
There we go.
That was pretty good.
Yep, that went well. You know, I got to get ready for the next hour. I got a bunch of reading I got to do, so I got to let you go, man.
Radio.
All right, talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
From Keene in the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world, this is Daryl W. Perry, host of FPP Radio News for Tuesday, September 29th, 2015. Silver is trading at $14.61 per ounce. Gold is valued at $1,129 per ounce. And according to BitcoinAverage.com, the average price of Bitcoin is $239. Antiwar.com reports, despite claiming previously that they had held all but the northernmost reaches of the central Ma'arib province, the pro-Saudi forces on Monday claimed to have captured the Ma'arib Dam in the southern part of the province, touting it as a big setback for the Shiite Houthis who control North Yemen. The dam itself is relatively unimportant, but control of it gives the pro-Saudi forces control over an area along a key highway connecting the south of the country, which they control, to the capital city of Sana'a. The goal of the Ma'arib offense was to give access to this highway and advance on Sana'a. Though taking the dam is a step in that direction, the reports this weekend from elsewhere in the province are less upbeat, suggesting the Houthis have managed to bring the offensive to a standstill in northern parts of the province with minefields. Though neither side issued a statement on casualties, locals claim 22 Houthis were killed in the fighting around the dam. However, at this point, there is no way of confirming that.
In Survivor Max by Davi Barker, 11-year-old Max must survive the zombie apocalypse alone in New Hampshire. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the lame brains swarm his home searching for living flesh. Max must apply his Porcupine Freedom Scouts training to plan his escape, but first he must prove that he's too smart to die. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook and Amazon, or read Chapter 1 free at SurvivorMax.com.
UPI reports Republicans and Democrats in the U.S. Senate on Monday voted in favor of a spending bill that would avoid a government shutdown without addressing the obstacle for funding Planned Parenthood. Lawmakers approved the measure 77-19, which included 44 Democrats and 31 Republicans, as well as the two independents voting in favor of the bill. 60 votes were needed for the measure to go before the full Senate. Congress is trying to get a spending measure passed before the government's operating capital runs out on Wednesday. The problem, though, has been some Republicans insisting that the bill includes language stripping Planned Parenthood of its federal money. The measure approved Monday, which contained no such language, would keep the government operating until December 11th if it is approved by the full Senate, House, and signed by Barack Obama. If a spending bill is not passed, some agencies of the federal government will shut down on Thursday. Some observers wonder how House Republicans will treat the measure if the Senate passes it with the resignation of Speaker John Boehner. Republicans and some Democrats have advocated pulling Planned Parenthood's federal money after a series of...
Okay, so I've been reading your goodies. You know, tell me your position in this. I know Raphael, and of course, you know, we hear about Cliff and such, but... your involvement started at what level, doing what?
Well, in 2010, I wrote the Open Transactions Library, and I've been working on it ever since.
Oh, so you're the guy that wrote the Open Transaction Library.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Now, what year did you do that?
I started writing it in January 2010.
And as a direct interface with Bitcoin or other digital currencies or blockchain in the back of your head, I mean, what was your motivation?
No, it's not blockchain related, or at least it wasn't at the time that I wrote it. It's just a financial cryptography system. And lately we've been working on a blockchain integration because we think there's a lot of sort of complementary behavior when you mix it up with blockchains. So it's something that you can use with or without a blockchain.
Well, the thing is, as I understand, I mean, I'm covering, you know, blockchain, Bitcoin in particular, since forever, you know, the beginning back in 10-9, I mean, you know, a long time ago when it was, you know, like nothing. And I understand, because I'm not technical, I understand more and more and more, and it becomes difficult for me because people will say something and then it not really be super accurate. You know, like, it's anonymous. No, it's pseudo-anonymous, which I look up and means not, okay? So I'm going,
right.
You know, wow, man, you know, somebody, you know, give me the 3x5 card bullet point of, you know, facts, you know, on this kind of stuff. So as I go through it, I've, you know, interviewed all the boys and girls and everybody. And so one thing that I wanted to understand, it talks in here, is as much as it, Open Transaction is off the chain and so on, it can use the chain and its hash rate and its computing power of, oh my God, you know, to secure things.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's talk about that.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Fear here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Oh, let's get one. All right, Chris Odom. Chris, Open Transactions and their company, Stash Inc. StashCrypto.com. Okay. So, Chris Odom, let's go ahead and give you the bio on him. Creator of the Open Transactions Project and the co-founder of Monitas. I imagine rhymes with gravitas. Okay. Chris has spoken at conferences all over the world and has been featured in Forbes, Wall Street Journal, Euromoney. China was recently added to the registry of transcendent financial cryptographers. Oh, okay. So he's like, you know, got skills. The core platform is built on open transactions. Now, this is, open transactions named Stash, Inc. Okay, so we're talking. So I guess we're going to refer to it as Stash, a financial crypto toolkit with unique capabilities. Now, we'll go into the capabilities of this. Now, I was contacted by Rafael Rodriguez. Rafael Rodriguez was partners with Paul Snow and was involved in certainly in at least the first Texas Bitcoin conference I went to a year and a half ago, and then the second one this last February, I think. And when I was there, that's when we first heard about MadeSafe. And Rafael, he knew I'm out screaming, why are we with pseudo anonymous? What kind of crap is pseudo anonymous? That's like not, unless I'm a geek and I do it. I'm like, oh, so then I got to learn paper wallets. And then where's the grandma just button? I just want a grandma just button. Well, I just want the just work just, you know, it's kind of, you know, like Think Penguin comes up with hardware and software and Linux and kind of, and I turned it on. It just worked. You know, I give me a just thing. Well, then Rafael knew that I was looking for these kinds of features, and he was excited. He's going, Ernie, man, you got to take a look. I was going, ooh, here it comes. So this is, I don't know, a couple months ago or so, and this summer. And he goes, but you got to keep it secret, man. We're not releasing everything yet, and we're going to want to talk to you later and can you put us in touch with? And kind of, and I go, well, you can't tell me because I can't keep a secret. Telephone, telegraph, and tell Ernie, man. I just, you know, so I go, don't tell me nothing. La, 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 la. So I did, said, when you're ready, let me know and we'll pump it. So I'm looking at some of the criteria here, what it provides, and I've heard tell of, promises of this type. So we're going to go through it with Chris Odom, and he's going to help us understand everything. And he's the creator of Open Transactions, Open Transaction Project. So let's go ahead. You know, Chris, help me out. You know, this is, you started doing this in what year?
January 2010, I started writing the Open Transaction System.
Why?
Well, I've always had sort of an interest in financial cryptography. And that was around that time that I just started to get back into it and research what was available, what was out there that I could use or play with. And that's when I started to get into Bitcoin. Bitcoin had just come out a few months prior to that.
Okay. And, all right, wait. Let's go back. When you say interested in this kind of cryptography, why? I mean, you're like, I can count the number of you guys on my fingers, man. I mean, you know, or is there a big giant, was it part of the crypto hippie kind of Paul Rosenberg thing or something? I mean, you know, what is it that you came out of that would have you even thinking that, you know, about writing cryptocurrency or some kind of a transaction anonymous? You know, why would you even do that? Where did that philosophy or that desire come from?
Well, you know, it's kind of cheesy to say the word empowerment, but you know that feeling you have when you hold an ounce of gold in your hand? That's basically the feeling of personal power that you get when you use crypto. It's just a powerful technology that gives an individual power that cannot be taken away by an authority.
Okay. Now, see, we got a whole hour. We'll get to it. I pinky swear. But, I mean, in this first segment, I need the motivation. I mean, I understand the power of, you know, kind of, ooh, I know something somebody doesn't and we can have and America and humanity can be freed from. And I'm just wondering how you even recognize that. What philosophy? How were you brought up? What, did you read Hayek at 13 or something? I mean, how old are you? I mean, I need to understand how you even knew to do this and the importance of it.
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think Austrian economics are really cool and everything, but I don't think you have to really have a good understanding of Austrian economics to just have that basic desire for human freedom and liberty.
Amen. Yeah, I came up from the street activist, and they're going, oh, when did you read it? How do you? I go, who? Hey, we just learned it on the street, man. Well, okay, so you have this desire to be able to transact, you know, do transactions, to barter, to use a current. You just wanted to be private, I guess. I mean, why would you do this, though? You see, a lot of people, I bet you'd never even been asked that question before. You know, I'm going, yeah, this is cool, okay? Why was it cool to you? Why would you set aside probably hundreds of hours of coding time to create this thing that didn't exist that you knew was important? Why?
Because I want control over my own money.
Okay, that's a good reason. All right. And you understood that this was a mechanism by which you could do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
So once you, now you got some computing skills, and you go, you know, I have the philosophy and the desire to none your damn business, I can do it myself, and we could do it, and you just did it, because you can.
Right.
Okay, score, man. All right. So open transaction, this ability, describe that. Was it inspired by crypto before Bitcoin? Did Bitcoin kind of give you some, leg up on some things you could do? Or, I mean, where does it fit into the crypto ecospace?
Well, my original inspiration came from the 90s. A man named David Chaum invented untraceable digital cash. And it made a little bit of a splash in the media. I remember back in the 90s reading about it in Wired magazine.
Oh, was this the Oregon thing or was assassination politic kind of crap?
Oh, you're thinking of Jim Bell.
Well, that's what I was thinking of cryptocurrencies. I mean, when that first came out, the man did not like it.
Yeah, Jim Bell, he came up with an idea called assassination politics, and he was going to take a prediction market and combine that with untraceable cash and use that to drive political change. But it's a really cool idea. I recommend people read the paper. But what he actually did was he stink bombed an IRS office and went to jail for 10 years.
Oh, that's what got him in trouble. You know, this is, people start just a spark of an idea. You know, the idea was is that if you had digital cash that could not be traced, you could have, you bet on when, a politician would die or something. Or, it was just kind of a weird thing. And I didn't really take it seriously other than it's a good thought process. But then the man, they wanted to, he came under surveillance then. They said, oh, hello. So I'm going from that, the concept of digital anonymous cash, not what you would use it for, but the fact that you would be able to have, it could be a plant for all we know, just to kind of seed the whatever. But, so I'm going, all right, so you started to see the evolution of this concept of having digital cash that could be untraceable. Is that the base kernel of what your idea is?
Well, that was one of the original inspirations for me back in the 90s. I remember when I heard about Xiaomi and Cash, I thought this is cool stuff, and it'd be neat to write a project that does it.
Okay, that does what is what we're going to find out. He had this great idea. Oh, no, ooh, I got the coding ability. I can do that. Give me my keyboard. I get out and get some. And then it's like 20 years later, and then, here we go. And I'm going, what was it they wanted to do? What is it he did? And what is it they got, like a fundraiser? In a company? What? We'll find out.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Okay, Chris. When we come back, I want to finish right up with that, and then we'll get into the actual wallet itself. But it's the technical what it is, it's a, crypto whatever that open you can kind of something. I need to have, you're talking to grandpa, okay?
Right, right.
So I need to have and understand. That's why I do this so well and get it explained and everything, because I have no idea what you're talking about, and I need to have an idea by the time we get done. We'll assume that. So the open transaction, is this what Amir Taki was using for his Open Bazaar thing?
No. Amir Taki wrote a project called Dark Market. And later on, the Open Bazaar guys took that code and ran with it, and they renamed it to Open Bazaar.
Okay, so is there anything... See, I need to know, it's not just a cryptocurrency. It's a method by which it can be stored and use a server but not be dependent on it or something, right?
Right.
Okay,
right.
So we'll get into that. You know, I understand, you know, the importance of all this, but, you know, we need to get into the motivation and, you know, how we're going to change the planet through and the you know, why we're doing, how we're excited and why, you know, the anarchists should give a crap or libertarians, you know, support. And that, you know, it has to be a philosophical thing. Seriously? Did you get your Chairman Mao hat over here?
Yeah, they had a big... Wait.
I'm sorry, what?
It was pretty cool up in Montreal. I don't know who your speaker is, but he seems like a good gent. But
we're coming back. God dang it. Well, hang out for the next segment.
I'll hang out for the next segment. I was up in Montreal, and they had a Bitcoin store up there, actually.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And Keith is Chairman Mao Montreal. What the heck does that have to do with anything?
Well, you know, I mean, we're opening the borders. We're inviting friends. We're meeting new friends. You know, I have Cuban cigars when I was up in Canada. They had a lot of Cuban love up there. And
so, oh, yeah, because of the Cuba thing. Man, they're exporting or
yeah,
doing
oh, yeah.
It.
They get all the, they get all the cigs.
Cigars. How much was that hat?
The hat was, let's see, it was 0.75 Canadian to U.S., so it was probably about $8.
Oh, yeah, you had a good time and lots of money.
I had a good time, yeah.
All right, well, thanks for stopping by.
And there was
by,
a Bitcoin.
Man.
There was a Bitcoin store up there as well, which was surprising.
Really?
Pretty nice laid out thing. I can't remember the exact street.
Is
but,
it just Bitcoin? Things you can buy with Bitcoin.
No,
like a
no,
dollar
it was
store
actually it was an actually Bitcoin educational store with some novelties, but also with some big computers talking about mining, some sharp guys. It really surprised me.
Really? In Montreal?
Montreal, yeah.
Wow.
And it was a Bitcoin storefront type thing.
Okay, so they weren't like SWAT teaming kicking in doors or nothing?
No, it was pretty sweet.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
How
well,
how Bitcoin, how we can make Bitcoin easy for
well, what's
you.
What's your comment on that, Chris? You know, Chris Odom from Stash Inc. You know, Canada, kind of a different ecosystem?
I think Canada is pretty similar to the United States. It's probably the most similar to the United States of any other country on Earth.
No, I mean, as far as Bitcoin, you know, the retail outlets having, you know, on the front street of the at the Friday night party or something.
Well, as far as I know, they're a little more free in Canada when it comes to cryptocurrencies. I don't think they're as heavily regulated as they are in the United States.
Yeah, well, this is the kind of stuff that happens. Okay, so let's get back to, you know, I need to understand the... the open transaction saw, you see a need, you see a desire, you got an opportunity. Hey, thanks for stopping by, Keith. You see an opportunity and you go, you know, I can write this code to do what? Tell me what it was that you're working on and what the finished product and how you, we'll get into how it goes in the stash, but I need to understand what it is that you created to do.
Well, with Stash, we're integrating it with Bitcoin, but... 5 years ago, when I first started writing the program, it wasn't about Bitcoin or related to Bitcoin at all. It was just a financial cryptography system with a bunch of sort of cool financial cryptography abilities. And there's a very easy way to explain it.
Please.
First of all, consider that the basic functionality is similar to like having a bank in a box. So it's this software that lets you do normal financial actions that people do already. Things like creating accounts, you can issue currencies, you can write checks, you can withdraw and deposit cash because it has the untraceable cash built into it. And so it sort of does all these normal banking style things that people already do. But what's special about it is that it does them in a way that is cryptographically secure. So the receipts are unforgeable. The cash is untraceable. It's able to prove everything in the system without storing any history. So it has sort of a bunch of these cool cryptographic capabilities.
Okay, so you here comes Bitcoin, and you go, oh, see, this is one thing that I can understand. If you're going to have any kind of a cryptocurrency, I'm starting to understand the motivation for a big hash rate. You know, this how much computing power is going to secure the network. You know, how much, you know, engine, how big your engine, and, you know, keeping the encryption hard and blah, 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 blah. So I'm going, okay, if you can marry the two and it not necessarily be Bitcoin, but the blockchain and the power of it used to secure or sign or be part of the currency to make it to where it can't be hacked or whatever. I mean, is that what you're going for, to try to integrate the two in such a way that you can use the power of Bitcoin, but also have some other features that you'd like to use?
Yeah, that's exactly it, in fact.
Bitcoin. Yay! Is, see how smart I am?
Bitcoin is different. You know, Bitcoin is one of the coolest things I've ever seen. This is an invention that's probably more important than the internet itself. You know, I would compare it to the printing press, this sort of thing, or the wheel. It's a historic innovation, and I think it's going to have a huge transformative effects on the earth.
Well, we've been not necessarily critical of Bitcoin, just really keeping an eye on. You name them, I've probably talked to them several times. And the point is I'm always, where's the central point of failure? Where is, if they, them, those, you know, they that want to rule you, maintain, enhance, expand their power over the sheeple kind of thing. I go, if they want something, the ones that won't leave us alone, I'm going, what would they do and where would they do it? Well, it kind of came down to core development, you know, and then when you start having, you know, the Gavin Hearn thing and we just rule you and we're going to change and get over it and kind of, you got to go, yeah, see, that's where it's going to happen. You know, it's going to be, there is a change, an alteration and so on. Then we got to count on people the miners to have some kind of financial incentive to not, you know, be stupid with the technology. And, you know, so I'm going, all right, well, a lot of people in the industry that understand it more, such as yourself, they're not as worried about it. They're going, yeah, it'll you know, come out and it'll still maintain its, you know, whatever. But what you're doing, Stash, is you create something that's off of that entirely, but it still uses the computing power of blockchain technology and Bitcoin in particular to secure it. So it gives you a little bit more insulative powers away from all the politics inside Bitcoin. Am I making myself clear?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the problem with Bitcoin, if you look in the Bitcoin space today, you can see there's a bunch of different services that are sprouting up to offer services to people who use Bitcoin, and then that's where the vulnerability appears, is in some central service. You take a institution like Mt. Gox. The Mt. Gox was providing market trading. And all you had to do was just send your Bitcoin to this guy in Japan, and he would hold it for you, and then he would offer all this market trading functionality. But then the problem is, it turned out that the guy who was trusted to hold the money lost the money.
Yeah, it was here a second ago. Okay.
So that's the problem in the Bitcoin world, is all these different Bitcoin services require you first to trust someone to hold your Bitcoins for you. And then that's where the problem arises, and I really want to solve that problem.
Well, what they do, that's the excuse that they have, and I've been to many Bitcoin conferences, we put on a Bitcoin summit, we go, and this is one of the big things. If we don't have government regulators, then, you know, and you give them your password, or it's through their service of whatever, and they can steal it. And I go, yeah, that's why you don't do that. You keep your own keys and so on. That was just a great lesson for everybody. Don't be stupid. And so they're going, no, we want to interface with the legacy banking system instead of just replace it. So by doing that, we need to get the hands-on seal of approval, sword on the shoulder from the government. And I'm going, we can't do this in such a way that we don't need the government. We can do these services and have a trustless, you know, we don't have to trust human beings in this. It can be, well, Chris Odom says, yep, uh-huh, I can do that very thing with Stash. We'll be right back. So am I close?
Yeah, very much so, actually.
See, this is, I understand. This is what my whole thing. I don't know if you've ever listened to any of our stuff, what we do or who we are or any of that stuff. But the main thing is this. I am like, where's the grandma adjust button to give me the anonymity for me to be able to use a digital currency and not have to worry about it being stolen, lost, it's gone? Because I downloaded the early blockchain.info wallet, and then it's gone. Okay, so it was, and I'm just going there. They went through the iterations of it, and you would think, I know these guys. They're, oh yeah, we'll help, and it's gone. So I probably got, you know, 1.5 Bitcoin, which could be $1 billion later, you know. So I mean, so I just don't want to get into problems. So then I started going, I learned from the guys, I started doing paper wallets. I got my own, you know, printer and a cheap laptop back there, never touched internet, doing kind of, you know, and, you know, having fun with that. Then I have a Cassatius coin that I use kind of like cold storage. I'll put some stuff on that. Then I got my Selim and Airbits are my favorites, and Airbits was the grandma just butt. I'm going, why is this so hard? Why can't you default, you know, to par authentication? You know, why can't you have a default to where I don't have to have an email for you know who I am, but still keep the encrypted files of the transaction that they took the server and it doesn't matter? I mean, you know, why can't we? I mean, on and on and on and on. So this is when they me whine about it enough. That's why Raphael knew to contact me on this, you know, because this is what I've been screaming about. So how's the user interface with Stash? Is it something ready that I can, you know, I can use it and feel grandma, I don't have to get a PhD in computer science?
Well, that's the whole idea, yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Says you. So this is, we'll talk about the actual application. But first, you can understand. That's why I got to do our shows. You know, this isn't a 15-minute thing. I mean, I want to know why you did it. I want to know where you came from. I want to, when we come back, a couple other questions I'll be asking is, one, how old are you? So what era did you come in, you know, kind of the cryptocurrency coding, what computer operating system kind of thing? And then, what your experience has been with how you hooked up with these other guys and how they knew about you and how did you fund it? Was there a seeding that, you know, that came in? Then we'll talk about the guy, you know, from Hushmail, and, you know, and it seems like this would integrate with, you know, his concept of Hushmail, you know, and then we're like, you know, how hush is it? And then, these kinds of things, you know, background is really interesting to me because, you know, either it works or it doesn't. I mean, you know, they're going to download the application or go look at it and it's going to work or not, and then everybody's going to do their Reddit comment on it sucks or doesn't and whatever. So how long has it been? Have you released it yet, or are you in the process of just promoting it now? What are you doing?
We have not released Stash yet. We're working on our first products that we hope to start unveiling in Q4 this year.
Okay. Yeah, this is an evolution of a lot of stuff, man. I can see the man is, it's a death of a million cuts from all over the planet. And as we get probably next few years, there'll be another couple of billion with a B people getting access to the internet, and they're going to need financial services. And if they do this, and it's easy without a retina scan to do this without the Western hegemonic we rule you banking system, it's just going to overwhelm them. You know, everybody's like, oh, we got it, we got it. You know, I got to wait. That's what I got to do. You know, I don't know what you're talking about. All right, we're coming back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Changing the planet! That's what we're all about here. The people that can do it and had the abilities and the inspiration and the confidence and the vision to do what? To have everybody on the planet with their little flippy phone be able to, maybe a smartphone, to transact with everybody. Chris Odom from Stash, Open Transaction. connections. He created some software to, you know, do some cryptocurrency, and then it evolved after blockchain technology kind of interface and secure the yada, yada, yada. And then all of a sudden we got grandma out there being free and such. You know, all right. So, John, how old are you?
Chris.
I'm sorry, Chris. I know a guy named John Odom. That's why I keep doing that. I apologize. Chris, how old are you?
I am 40 years old.
Okay. So you're not a kid, but you're kind of in the... so you were born like in late 70s. So you kind of miss the Altair, you know, you miss the, you know, the early PC kind of thing. You're kind of came of age along with the internet in the 90s.
Yes. Well, I was born in 75, so I was 20 in 95.
Yeah, so you're like, when did you start getting, was you a 13-year-old, ooh, give me some, or did you just come online kind of with the email and the internet as it started, World Wide Web and so on?
Well, I was into computers very young. I was one of those kids who was going to computer camp when he was 8 years old.
Ooh, that sort of thing. And had some goodies to play with. Okay, all right. That's a good. You see, that's why it's important is to understand how much inside you. I mean, were you interested in hardware or was it all software? Because I know a lot of guys, they had to learn, you know, coding and software to be able to use the hardware or the chip of the Radio Shack kind of thing. You know, then you started to having actual boards and computers that were done. It's like Raspberry Pi now. Back then, it's already done, and I get to go play coding. I mean, you know, what was your experience?
Well, I was always into software. I was always into programming on my computer, trying to write programs, write games, that sort of thing when I was a kid.
Really? So games, well, yeah, it's a motivation, get you code. I'm interested because I just ordered a Raspberry Pi 2. My granddaughter at 6 wants a kid spy computer, you know, kind of thing. So we're having fun with that. In fact, it was supposed to be here Saturday, but it's got to make a diversion over to the NSA first for and put something on before I get it. But the, one of these days, I'll get, hopefully today. But the, so you have this coding experience from a need because it wasn't there, or a desire to change the world? Were you always looking to develop something cool? How did you get into this crypto digital currency thing?
Well, I had an interest in crypto since the 90s. Like I said before, I was interested in untraceable cash and this sort of thing. I started to realize
that why this is so, you know, everybody skips over this. You're that something so monumental to replace the Fed and people be free and they're around the world to do it. Where the hell did that come from?
Well, I mean, you know, when you hold a piece of gold versus holding a Federal Reserve note, and in one case you're trusting someone else and that person has power over you. And in another case, you have all the power right there in your own hand, and you don't have to trust anyone else to have it.
So at 20-something years old, you start to realize the power of this.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Wow, absolutely. Man, that's amazing. Okay, so then as time went on, was it going fast enough for you? It couldn't happen fast enough, and then all of a sudden, boom, hits Bitcoin. You go, ah. I mean, you know, so tell me what the aha moment, finally you're going, yep, here we go.
Well, the biggest aha moment for me was realizing what Bitcoin really was. It was very difficult at first when I first heard about Bitcoin to try and understand what it really was and what it really meant. For example, at first, I would ask myself, well, what is it backed with? It's not backed with anything. You know, it's not backed with gold.
It's how much silver and gold I'm willing to give up for its features, I can tell you that.
Yep, that's exactly what it is. What I realized at some point was that Bitcoin really is gold. It's not a transaction system that you would use for transacting gold. It is the gold itself. That's what it really is at a basic level. It has these unique properties that cause the free market to select it as a form of money purely through natural market forces, the same way that the free market would select gold.
Okay, so let's go ahead. You know, we got one more segment after this, but let's go ahead and get into it. Now you have accumulated enough support from others that recognize the power of what you've done, and they've, has it been with help, marketing, cash? I mean, you know, you have the gentleman that, you know, one of the beginning, if not the guy from Hushmail, Cliff Balsley, and I'm going, okay, his involvement in this is along the lines of what he's been trying to do, so this is just a nice little dovetail. Are you guys friends? How did you guys come together to go save the planet?
Well, Cliff and I have known each other for a couple of years, and we just started up this company this year. And the idea is to take the Open Transactions project and, first of all, to make it easy for grandma to use. Just
Thank
make
you.
It very user-friendly and easy, because crypto is difficult, and if you use it wrong, then it's not secure. And so the only way to actually make it secure is to make it very easy so that people can't use it wrong.
Oh, God, thank you.
It's a massive problem in the crypto space is that precisely that. And then the second thing that we're trying to do is we want to integrate it with Bitcoin, because we think we can solve a lot of problems that we see in the Bitcoin space. And right now in the Bitcoin space, you see all these different businesses, and they all ask you to trust them to hold your money. They're all holding people's Bitcoin, and then that's where the vulnerability comes
Coinbase, in. Coinbase, Circle, BitPay, and oh, by the way, when the man says and it didn't get transferred, if not then, they pushed a button and it's gone. You know, so I'm going, this is, I understand, I mean, a lot of convenience, and there are people saying, you know, we need wide adoption, and they think that is going to be how much it'll integrate with the dollar. And I'm going, no, it's how much it doesn't have to, you know, so I'm, and easily do it without it being traced or tracked or cut. And these are the things that you're offering. And the blockchain, the Bitcoin blockchain, is useful because of what? Just its hash rate. I mean, it's securing power. It's why? Why would interface with Bitcoin?
Well, Bitcoin is very useful to me because it's censorship resistant. And there's a really great analogy I like to use, which is Napster. You know, Napster was this file sharing service that allowed people to share music with each other, and then very quickly Napster was shut down. Because it had a central service where you could just go in and shut it down. So that's what they did. And this drove the creation of BitTorrent. BitTorrent is a P2P file sharing system that enabled people to share files without having some central service. And BitTorrent has not been shut down. Now, we know that it would be shut down. If they could shut it down, they would, because they shut down Napster. But they have not shut down BitTorrent because they can't. And now we're seeing the same thing with Bitcoin. Do you remember eGold?
Oh, yeah. We first started doing radio in 2003, we were taking for our archive, when we first started doing MP3, what the hell is that? When we started doing that in 2003, and what happened was, eGold was going around then, Wired Magazine had a big thing on it, remember the big article, and libertarians or, you know, whatever, and it went to United Arab Emirates, and they had the gold there, and it's ours now. So I'm going, wow, man, you can't do anything. But we have been always on being able to do this. Now we see with Shapeshift and what you're doing and so on, that you can have gold as the, you know, locked in financial back, anything that you want to do. But now we have the security of the man's not kicking in some door and taking something.
Well, right. I mean, eGold is sort of like Napster. It was this central service. Everyone was starting to use it. It was getting really popular. And then, authorities came in and shut it down.
If they can, they will. So I need to know when we come back. I got to save it, man. Ooh, go to the archive. We'll be talking some more. When we come back, you know, Stash, is it going to be to where they can come get it if they really, 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 really wanted to, or is it impossible? We're going to find out when we come back on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit. Chris Odom. Okay, so we're doing pretty well. When we get in the next one, we'll go and you can just monologue me, okay? Now, we also, at the end of the show, I got another, I don't know, 6-8 minutes before we go to the next hour, and you can just yak without me interrupting. We can finish up on some stuff. Or, you know, if you got nothing to do, I mean, I got a little bit. What do I got to do? Some story. I can wait till tomorrow. We can talk about. If you got another, you can stick around for the next hour. If we're not done, we can do that.
Oh, whatever works for you.
All right. Well, just if you got time, we'll make sure we get it out. I don't want to bore people, but I want to get into the good. So you can understand, because we count on the archive a lot for the show. You know, most of my listenership is, all the pod, it's not, just a live audience and so on, the affiliates or anything. It's the podcast. I mean, it's the iTunes. It's all that crap. So this is there whenever they you know, do a search on your name or stash or whatever we put up there, the show will come up. So having the background and understand where the idea's genesis came from, you know, is good, because you never get that, you know. Who the hell is Chris? I mean, you know, so I apologize. John Odom here in the Valley, I keep thinking of him, you know. But that's not a usual name. I mean, you know, fortunately I've at least heard of it before. Okay, so the actual presentation of where you guys are at now, are you looking for a round of funding? Are you looking for just getting the word out? Are you ready to release the app? I mean, at what stage are you?
We are raising funds right now, but Cliff is really the best person to talk to about that.
Okay, so they're going to make sure you get, you know, like you can keep working.
Right, exactly.
All right, cool. Exactly. And what's Raphael's role in this? You know, how is it that he came by it?
He's just been talking to Cliff. Raphael's always been into the Bitcoin space, you know, shows up at the conferences, knows a lot of the people, that sort of thing. And so he's been working with Cliff, and I think that's where we got put in touch with you.
Well, how does it work? Is he a partner in it? Is he just excited about it? He wants to see it succeed, you know?
He's just excited about it. I mean, he's been involved early on.
Yeah, I know Raphael, a good guy. I like Raphael. He went to our Freedom Summit, and we met a few times, and we get the yak. And I know why he thought of me. He's just going, man, this is what Ernie's been whining about, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm going, yay. I'm going, you know, whenever I come up with it, I go, why can't somebody explain? You know, tell me, oh, it's hard and it's this and that. What I go, you know, I just need to understand. Why can't this particular feature be part of these different cards? Why is this so hard? Why? Well, because I didn't think of it. I didn't do it. And nobody paid me to. Well, okay. So it's just waiting on me to get, you know, what. All right. So I play Joe Sixpack Grandpa kind of thing, going, look, man, when you come up with this, whatever, you know, this thing, you come up with a battery that I can run overnight and get off the grid. When you come up with an electric car that, you know, Tesla Model X is coming out today. That might be on my radar screen. So I'm going, you know, you do that. Yeah, boom. Boom, shakalaka. I'm all over it. You do it where I can grow food, kind of chickens and aquaponics. Boom, I'm all over it. When you do that, so these things in my lifetime are happening. I was born in 61, graduate 79, I'm 54. So I've been, you know, if I can think of it and articulate it well, what I want, within, you know, 3 years, I'm getting it. So I'm just sitting here, you know, screaming about everything I want. And then they go, hey, Ernie, talk to Chris Odom. He's going to hook you up. I'm like, yay, team. All right, here we go.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.fm.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
You know what this is?
This is the end.
Yeah, Federal Reserve. You know this. Can they feel it? Can you feel it? Are we breathing down your neck? Especially with all the stuff that's going on to provide. I'm. You know, a lot of people are just so afraid of the collapse of the system, and I'm just not. I'm just not afraid. I just know that there's so much infrastructure out there and ideology. And the capability of being able to provide all the functions that we have for money, all of the functions we have for barter and transaction, heck, even our silver calculator app. I big giant weight got off my shoulders, off my chest, when we developed and had and promoted the silver calculator app, where I can go anywhere and instantaneously it give me what the spot price is and how much I need in junk silver, and ounces of silver is silver, and pay and change and done. You know, in whatever currency or other metals. When you have that about going, oh, one less thing I got to worry about. Then you have the digital currencies that are coming online, but yeah, the ease of use to be able to not have to trust somebody with my password, or I got an account somewhere that my Bitcoin resides, and we're regulated by the government. You could trust us now. And I'm going, seriously? You know, that's exactly what I'm trying to get away from. And, you know, we have Chris Odom is, you know, done that particular thing. And tell me where you are in the stage of this. Is it something still an idea, a dream? Or are you starting a beta? Are you getting ready to release? Tell me everything, Chris.
Well, we just started up the company and we're fundraising right now. And we expect to have some early unveiling of our first products in Q4 of this year. And we'll just continue unveiling more and more and more because there's a lot that the system can do.
Well, how big is the team on this? You've been working on it a long time, and then all of a sudden, and here we go? Or is it all of a sudden you're like, well, damn, we got a little bit of money and you brought on 15 coders? I mean, you know, where are you at?
Well, right now there are six of us.
Oh, so you guys are busy, you know?
Yep.
Oh, hammering it out. Well, this is, how did it come to the attention of one of the founders of Hushmail? I mean, you know, he's like, you know, Ed, I want to play with this. It goes in line with what I've always wanted to do. You know, Cliff Baldsley. Is that how you say it, Baldsley?
Yeah, Baldsley.
Okay, Baldsley, you know, it's Baltzley, founder of Hushmail. How is it that, you know, he got involved? What sparked his interest?
Well, I don't know what originally sparked his interest in Bitcoin. You know, I assume that he recognized its revolutionary potential. But I met him at a Bitcoin meetup. So I just went down to the local Bitcoin meetup here in Austin, Texas, and he came up to me, actually, and he was familiar with open transactions, and he was just really excited about it.
How old is he?
He, I believe, is 44.
Yeah, see, this is it. You guys, man, you were the, you know, horn rim, high cut, you know, AV computer geek kid back in the 90s, right?
Yep.
I mean, the nerds will rule the world. Okay. So this has been, and really what I'm trying to, you know, we have, you know, a lot of athletes in the family and all that kind of stuff. But our grandkids, yeah, that's cool and play the games and everything. But damn it, you're learning Raspberry Pi and how to code at six. That's just the way it's going to be. So this is, you know, nerd is the new cool, man. And it's changing the freaking planet. Now tell me how Stash is going to, in the ecosystem of crypto technologies and currencies, and you know, tell me what service it provides. What's the promise that it's going to give me? How is it going to have an impact? And is it geographical? Is it just America? Is it a generational thing? Is it worldwide? You know, tell me how this is going to be thrown out to the world.
Well, what we're trying to do by integrating with Bitcoin is solve problems that are currently haunting the Bitcoin space. We want someone to be able to use a service like Mt. Gox without having to trust them to hold the money. And we think we can solve that problem. So instead of taking the Bitcoin and giving it to some service and trusting him to hold that money, instead the Bitcoin becomes locked in a multi-signature pool on the blockchain. So that way you can still use these sorts of services without having to have them hold the money to do it.
Oh, so there's no server required because the information is held on the blockchain itself, the ledger?
Well, the money will be held on the blockchain itself. And we still have servers, but they're special servers. These are servers that you don't have to trust.
Well, I mean, so what do? They just help you obfuscate, you know, different things or transact or whatever. I mean, is there any possibility that I would lose my, is it Bitcoin or another currency?
Well, the idea isn't for them to obfuscate your money, but to just give you power and security and verification over your money. Let me give you an example.
Please.
Let's say that I want to do a transaction, and my client software writes up a little signed receipt. Now, you know, these digital signatures are unforgeable, so no one else can make my signature unless he had my key. And so then the server, you know, I send this receipt to the server, and the server verifies it and countersigns it and sends it back to me, and that's my receipt. But the point that I'm making here is that the server is unable to create a false receipt. It's unable to forge these receipts because they can't forge my signature.
Because it's using the Bitcoin blockchain to make that, you know, transaction secure and forever, ledger and always, or what?
Actually, independent of the blockchain, just the use of a digital signature. So it actually uses cryptography. It uses your private key to sign the signature, and then only your public key can verify that signature. And so what we have is we have servers you don't have to trust. The server is able to process these receipts but it's not actually able to create a false receipt. The server could never create a false account balance or false transaction and put my signature on it because he can't forge my signature.
Oh, so this is transaction and identity authentication, kind of like, you know, going two-way with PGP email encryption.
Right. We're basically using the same technology from PGP email encryption, and we're applying that to create transaction systems.
Okay. Now, this is, you know, for people that don't understand, if you were to write something to me and I had my private key, I could only open it with the, you use the public key to encrypt it, I could only open it with my private key. But it works the other way,
right,
too, is that if I send you something and use it in my private key, only the public key would be able to open it, so you knew it was me that originated it.
Well, yeah, that's a digital signature.
Okay, so
it
that's
uses
a
the same keys.
Yeah, so you got to explain. You can't just say digital signature. It don't mean anything.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we have the digital signature is that I created the receipt, I created the transaction, I created the entry, I created, and you know it was me, and then that information is housed on your servers. It just creates it, or is it housed on the blockchain for Bitcoin?
Well, the server countersigns it. The server's like a notary. You know, what he does is he verifies the receipts and then signs off on them. But he can't create them because he can't forge the user's signature.
Okay, now why would I need you to provide this validation or this? Why can't I just use the Bitcoin blockchain? What's the service that Stash provides that I need it?
Well, this is what allows us to build all kinds of cool transactional functionality
on
top of these digital signatures. All sorts of things. Like I said, you can use it to open accounts, issue currencies, write checks. It does untraceable cash. It does bid-ask markets. It does scripted smart contracts. And it also does all these things instantaneously. So there's no 10-minute delay. It's very cheap and very fast compared to a blockchain.
If you're doing bid-ask and you're an exchange, man, they're going to come out and say, hello, or are you just, we're in Finland on the space base, moon base alpha if you don't get to. I mean, you know, how are you, any of these services, the man's going to want to come say hello?
Well, we're not going to be operating any services. We're just going to be writing software, and then everyone on the planet is going to be running it.
And who, there's no central point of we're going to get you?
No, I don't think so. No.
Damn it! They're going to want to.
You know, we're going to start off with Bitcoin because we think we can solve big problems for Bitcoin. Like I said, right now in the Bitcoin world, people, they're using services like Mt. Gox where they have to trust the guy to hold the money. And we think we can take those same funds and lock them up on the blockchain in such a way that you don't have to trust someone else to hold that money.
Has the alternative currency people such as Circle and Mt. Gox and, you know, Donna, go ahead and get him back. They, you know, Circle and Mt. Gox and so on, have they already gotten to the point to where they're in opposition to what you're doing? You know, is that where we're at? You know, I need to know. We're going to find out in the after show. We'll do that. We'll see. We can keep in mind we just lost them and button's put. So we'll go ahead and find out if the very opposition to this new technology and innovation is going to come from your competition. What do you think, Chris? Is that, you know, the competition? Are they're like, ah, damn it. Stash is going to compete?
Well, I don't think we really have any competition. There's no one else releasing this kind of software.
Why? I don't mean competition that way. I mean competition that you're threatening their bottom line. That's what I'm talking about. More, go to the archive.
Why did you move to?
Okay, that is a good question right there. If you got, you're offering this, what you provide is an answer to a lot of the problems that you have with BitPay and Circle and Coinbase and all these KYC anal probe customer crap. Okay, so
right.
what you're doing is they're going, oh hell no, you should go find somewhere to go get him and get some and kind of because he's not playing, damn it, and we're kissing Uncle Sam's butt. So I'm just going, that's where your opposition's going to come from. I want to bet. You want to bet? I got some Bitcoin we can bet on.
Here's the thing. I think once people are actually able to use it, then it's too late. You know, the technology is so powerful that once it's out there, and it doesn't really matter to me what some, obsolete business had to say about it.
I know. That's what makes it so dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. You've been around enough to know this is they're coming at, they're closing down everything. You know, we just had this. Have you ever familiar with the YouTube channel? It's Storm Clouds Gathering. Have you ever seen their videos?
Oh, no. No, I haven't.
You may have. And they're very popular all over, like Daily Paul, Popular Liberty, during the Ron Paul thing, and kind of, you know, it's just very well done. It's just him and his baby son. He's like, you know, the world four, and they kind of evolved into really quality stuff. And he just did a video. He goes, look, man, I've been holding this back. I got to tell you guys, we have millions of hits on everything. We were making a livelihood on our YouTube channel of, they demonetized everything. If you talk about war, if you talk about this, you're talking about Bitcoin, you're talking about, they are just like, hell no, you're not allowed. They did it to We Are Changed, Luke Radowski, antiwar.com, they demonetized the ads. They're coming after, and it's not a violation of copyright or because you use somebody's music. It's none of that. It's a philosophical thing. And I'm going, this is, you're going to see in this space what you guys provide and the promise of what you're wanting to make available to humanity is the man's going to hell freaking know. Let me tell you, that's the one thing that we do not want to happen. And I'm wondering where the point of failure is. If you have servers that provide these different services, if they kick in the door and they take all that, how am I diminished as a user and for how long?
Well, remember, these are servers you don't have to trust.
Yeah, so?
So this is,
I mean, servers I may want to use.
This is completely different than any normal server. Normally, a server acts as an authority over you and has power over you.
But it also provides a service for me, right? I mean, that's why,
right.
Why do you have the server? It's there for what?
What it does is it countersigns the transactions so that people can do these transactions.
Okay,
with
so
each
they
other.
Take them down. I'm not able to countersign anymore. I won't lose anything. I just won't have access to some of the services on the app.
Remember, these are servers you don't have to trust. So that I would need to draw a very clear distinction between this and something like PayPal. Okay, PayPal has the power to change your account balance.
Oh, no. I understand that. That's not my point. I'm talking about, you know, the fact that I didn't lose it, the fact that it's still there, the fact that I can still access, but I don't have access to some of the services that your servers provide.
Well, I'm not going to be running these servers. I'm just a software company, you see. And so these servers can pop up anywhere on the earth, and you don't have to trust them for them to earn a profit.
Okay, so why do you have to have a server? Why can't it be, you know, a peer-to-peer thing or a MadeSafe thing, or it's just data out in the ether of the encrypted whatever the heck thing? Why do you have to have a server?
There are actually certain really powerful benefits to using servers. They're much faster and cheaper than blockchain, and they add a lot more functionality. Like, for example, Bitcoin, you know, as soon as Bitcoin wants to do market trading, they go put all their Bitcoins on a server somewhere. So I thought Bitcoin was P2P, right? But as soon as you want this extra functionality, like using a market, then suddenly they go and use a server to do it.
Yeah, no, I understand. This is my point. I'll give you a perfect example. You know, I had a restaurant, okay? So I'm willing to take Bitcoin. Matter of fact, we have a pizza restaurant here, one of the guys that do, all right? So I go, okay, so I'm innovating. We did our Bitcoin summit. We used, we catered the party on Saturday night from the Bitcoin taken restaurant of the whatever, and they you know, muscled in, the man shut down some kind of, and I can't do the service of the transaction. I didn't lose my money, but it just interrupted commerce. You know, I'm wondering, is there a threat to that?
I think if you could prevent people from using services all over the internet, all over the whole earth, then maybe. Because the thing is, let's say one of these servers was stupid enough to run in New York and it got shut down, then my client software is just going to use one that's in Hong Kong instead. So you have to go and shut down the one in Hong Kong.
Okay, so it's decentralized. So it's an actual physical server, but you can have multiple in different jurisdictions of, you know, Moonbase Alpha.
That's true, and you could also have them running on anonymous networks like Tor. Because remember, you don't have to trust them.
They don't like you, man. Haven't you got the memo? I mean, if somebody come in there with a, you know, black suit and a mirror sunglasses, a little curly thing in his ear, come explain it to you?
Not yet, but I'm just waiting for that to happen.
You think it will?
You know, probably not.
Well, you know, whenever they do this kind of stuff, they just, it's like training for anarchists. Yes, and they will do that. See, that's why I always ask that question. Where, if they can, They, them, those won't leave us alone. There are those just want to be left alone. Those won't leave them alone. If they can, they, them, those, they will. You know,
well, they're driving the development of the software. I mean, the persecution of e-gold is what brought us Bitcoin, in the same way that the persecution of Napster is what brought us BitTorrent. They're driving the creation of this software. You know, if no one had ever persecuted e-gold, you would have a government-regulated e-gold right now, and that's what everyone would be using instead of Bitcoin. But by persecuting it, they've drove the creation of Bitcoin.
Yeah. You know, that's, and it's not lost on me that, you know, the release of Bitcoin or the white paper, Satoshi, whatever, was right after 2008 crash. They're going,
oh, yeah.
You know, okay. You know, and here we go. So let me put this up here. Persecution of e-gold created, what?
Bitcoin. Just in the same way that the persecution of Napster led us to the development of BitTorrent.
Napster to BitTorrent. Okay.
And so any kind of other persecution or regulatory heavy-handedness is actually the best thing that anyone could ask for, because it's actually driving the creation of this new software that will obsolete those old 20th century regulatory bureaucracies.
Yeah, hold on a second. Donna's changing the hour. Yeah, we can keep you over if you got time.
I actually realized I have to go to a doctor's appointment this morning.
Okay. We'll go ahead and I'll do my best. Well, can you do one more segment and kind of,
yeah,
you know, let's do this, because I want to you know, get the persecution of evil. We kind of mentioned it, but I want to emphasize this more, because regulation and we rule youism is what's driving this stuff. And I'm wondering, the counter to this, it has to be, it's like a propaganda thing. It has to be a, you know, you're not allowed, because you must be a terrorist. You're a terrorist, because we can't track everything. You must be a terrorist kind of thing. All right, here we go.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
You know, we're just going to go another segment. We weren't quite done. I wanted to give him an opportunity to talk about some other stuff. You know, the other thing is, let's take a look at this logo. And I want to see, you know, stash, as in mustache, and an anonymity with the key cut. Very cool, very cool. I'm going, all of a sudden, I get that now. All right. So the one thing that we were talking about in, over the break is, top of the hour news, is the persecution of e-gold, which a lot of us that were involved in, we're going, yep, here it comes. We thought that we could have a gold-based digital currency that it actually, you give assets or money or deeds of house, whatever it was, and you have that value put in gold that actually resided somewhere. Well, that made it easy to go get it, okay? So then you're going, wow, that's kind of cool, but the man, well, this is something using Visa that Peter Schiff is doing, but only for people that aren't U.S. citizens. If you're a U.S. citizen, you are not allowed to be free. That's just the way it is. Then you have Napster, that was the guy that, whatever his name was, that went on to advise and help and become a gazillionaire along with Mark Zuckerberg on Facebook, started Napster. Well, they shut it down, but you know what? You don't have Tower Records anymore. You know, so the reason is what? Well, it was this peer-to-peer of being able to download music. I did a bunch with Napster and LimeWire, and you know, and a lot of the rejoiners or something I may have got from, you know, God knows where. But the point is I'm going, okay, When they shut that down, there was such an enormous market for I just want to make my own Time Life audio album of Kiss My Butt, you know, and you go out there and do that, and then the motivation for creating BitTorrent. Now, when I have Tor, BitTorrent, Tor browsers, explain the difference of all those and how that evolved from this crackdown by the man on ones and zeros.
Well, you know, with Napster, people were able to share music very quickly and easily, but it was very easy for authorities to go in and shut that down. But, you know, I'm sure they viewed that as a victory at the time. But what that did was that drove the creation of software like BitTorrent that otherwise never would have been developed. People just would have kept using Napster. And we're seeing the same thing now with eGold. You know, eGold was persecuted and shut down. And it was actually shameful the way that they treated Doug Jackson in that whole fiasco. But what it did was it drove the creation of new systems that are censorship resistant, like Bitcoin, that are not so easy to shut down.
Okay, now BitTorrent and Tor, you know, assume I know nothing and it's probably true. So go ahead and explain to me the evolution from a peer-to-peer network of Napster and where BitTorrent came from, how it works, what it does. Then we'll get into, what do you call them, VPNs or the boxes that obfuscate, you know, the routing. We'll get to that. I want to make sure we touch on that. But go ahead and BitTorrent, explain it to Grandma, Grandpa.
Well, Napster was just
explain it like
service.
I'm five, like I'm five.
Napster was just a service that allows people to share music. And so, you know, authorities just went in and shut down the service. And that caused software developers to write new systems that were peer-to-peer. And that means there was no central service. It was just all the users together formed this peer-to-peer network for file sharing of music. And it was not so easy to shut down. In fact, it has not been shut down. And BitTorrent is now the dominant way that people do file sharing on the internet today. And what you see with Bitcoin is that it's basically the BitTorrent of money. You know, same thing with Napster. They went and shut down Napster. Similarly, they went and shut down eGold. And all that does is drive the creation of these new peer-to-peer cryptographic currencies that are basically impossible to shut down. And that is the real benefit of Bitcoin. It's not untraceable. It's not anonymous. But it is most certainly difficult to shut down, if not impossible to shut down, because of its censorship resistance.
So the interface of Stash with this is you saw some services that needed to be available that could be useful to commerce, and you got the hash rate of Bitcoin to be able to secure and protect it, and you have these trustless, you got servers, but they're trustless. All it does is just verify a transaction, then it's always available and done and kind of, and it could be servers could be anywhere anyway, and they so give me the in-game benefit of Stash and what you bring to the ecospace. It's going to be different.
Well, by integrating Bitcoin with our software, what we're doing is we're solving problems that exist right now in the Bitcoin space. In the Bitcoin space, people who want to use Bitcoin beyond just simple transfers, they have to trust someone else to hold their Bitcoin. And Mt. Gox is a classic example. People went to Mt. Gox and they said, here, hold our Bitcoin. Mt. Gox holds all their money. And then in return, they get to do this market trading. But meanwhile, the guy was able to take off with the money. And so we think we can solve that problem for the Bitcoin space.
Okay,
we can
now the problem being solved, I was at the Texas Bitcoin Conference 14, and I remember, and in the New York Bitcoin Conference in 14, and what they did is they came up and they had regulators and FBI and SEC, all they got, we got to have, because of Mt. Gox, we got to have government, we rule, you control, protect consumer, because that's what happens, Mt. Gox, and that's why you need us. So you're saying, no, we don't need you. I mean, is that what you're in competition with?
Well, I mean, look at a service like Circle, right? They're regulated, right? They're compliant with all the regulations, but they're still holding all the money, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, if somebody's holding it, the man comes
somebody
in with a big gun and says, it's
money.
Ours now. Yep, it's ours now.
Somebody's holding all the money. Well, that's the whole problem, and that's what we're going to get rid of. And whether that entity is regulated or not isn't really my concern. My only concern is, does this guy have the physical ability to put his hands on that money?
Amen, brother. Okay, that was be to my next point that I want to talk to you before we let you go after this segment. I got a bunch of news to go over, but I wanted to make this point. there is going to be people that and organizations and a Bitcoin industrial complex that's being up around KYC, and we love Uncle Sam. They're the ones that are threatened. They're the ones that are going to go, yeah, and the man, you should go get stashed. All of a sudden, you start seeing this lobbying of Congress build up to where they're going to, as a threat to them, it's not a philosophical thing, it's a money-making thing. When you got the Winklevi twins up there, kind of, stash is going to eat into our, damn it. This is where the ecospace is going towards this trustless server. They kind of, hell no, we need M16s to go explain it to them, and you're not allowed. That's where the pressure against you is going to come from, in my opinion. What say you?
Well, I'm not too worried about that. I mean, it's sort of like Bitcoin itself. You know, Bitcoin has this cryptographic security to it, and it doesn't really matter what kind of laws or regulations you pass or rules that you make. It's censorship resistant and it's cryptographically secure, and that's that. And the same is true with our software. I mean, once our software is out and people are actually able to use it, then it sort of becomes a new world. You know, it's like the invention of the airplane.
You know when you win? You know when you win? I'll tell you when you win. It's when they come up and they say, don't buy that beer. The workers peeing it at the factory.
Yeah.
They're going to have to, you know, sully the name before it even starts. This is not just competence created. This is the problem that I've had from the beginning when they did the, I think it was San Jose a few years ago when they first had the venture capitalists coming in and they were going, ooh, go get some. They didn't want to have the anarchists out there advocating the power of what you bring to it. You know, this is, they go, no. We need a government approved license permission slip. We are Uncle Sam approved in dealing, interfacing with. What you offer is something totally separate from that. It just doesn't matter, and the power goes to the individual. That makes you dangerous, and that's why you need to keep talking to us and other people as we go through this and open and develop and present this type of software. And I want to help. We'll be right back.
Uncover.
There you go. Okay, this is, I can see, I think there's more worry than you think. I can see the power of that. That's what makes it dangerous. You know, I mean, it gets down to where's the central point of failure. Hopefully you got it all written or it'll be you.
I mean, you can worry and fear all you want. I mean,
no fear here. Declare your independence.
Right? The government say they can worry and fear all they want, but what they can't do is put the genie back in the bottle.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm glad you're in that mindset. You know, that's why Raphael's kind of, you know, you talk to Ernie. I'm hip, man. I'm with you. I just want to make sure you done. And I guess these experiences with eGold, Napster, all this kind of stuff, BitTorrent and everything, you understand if they can, they are, which kind of drove a lot of your decision-making, I would imagine, as you develop the product.
Yeah.
So a little fear is okay. It tells you what to avoid. There'd be saber-toothed tigers in that pit. Let's not go in there. Okay. Hey, man, thanks for coming on and spending the extra time with me. I really, please keep me informed as you do. You know, we have, this is the kind of thing that I would like to not only keep on the edge of our awareness on the radar screen, but also announcement, banner ads, promotion of people to at least be aware of it on the website. So if you can get me some banner ads and stuff, you know, when you're ready to launch or do, you know, let me know and then we can promote it.
Cool. Yeah, we'll definitely do that.
Okay. Well, have Raphael call me and we'll see if we can work out some kind of package and just, you know, give you something for nothing for at least a couple weeks or something just to when you're ready.
Okay.
You know, I'm with you, brother. Hey, thanks for coming on, Chris. Made a new friend, man. Good luck.
All right. Thank you very much.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye.
LRN.fm is proud to announce our official listening apps for Android and iOS devices. Now you can easily tune into our streams anywhere, anytime on your smartphone or tablet. Just visit apps.lrn.fm or search for LRN.fm in the Android or Apple app stores. Please download, rate it 5 stars, then share the link on social media, and let your friends and family know how you're listening to LRN.fm. Download it now, free, at apps.lrn.fm. That's apps.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now,
Ernest Hancock.
So either you're with us, or you're with somebody else, or you're all by yourself.
Yeah, who you with? All right, this is what we're going to be talking about. You're, who's us? Who you with? You know, that this is one of the stories that I want to go over. There is an attack on people. I just want to be left alone. I'm over here. I'm not bothering anybody. No, you got to be on the grid. You know, all animals must be in their cage. You know, this concept. And I have Donna. They went, probably shouldn't say who or what or whatever, but she went with a group of people, being the agent on looking to buy land in sufficient quantity to, you know, do communities and whatever. And that's why we've been, you know, going around the state and looking where, and is there any community, a municipal corporation of a small town of We Love Freedom Lovers, or is there just got to go out in the middle of the desert, but you're still in the county, or what's the laws? Well, this is what's happening in Colorado. Regulated out of existence. Off-gridders forced back on the grid, camping on own land, illegal. Now, this is in Costilla County, Colorado, and a lot of the people are, their agencies are trying to regulate off-grid living out of existence. And they're even threatening jail time for those not hooking into local utilities. So what they've done is, a lot of people in San Luis Valley in Colorado, which I'm sure is beautiful, looks like it, Thai desert kind of thing, like northern Arizona here. And it's a combination of cheap land, you know, lack zoning regulations. We'll just go on there and we'll buy a big, large homestead in the area. And the lifestyle is now being threatened by government officials that move to make it illegal. Costilla County, Colorado, bans camping on your own land. Zoning officials attempt to make people hook back into the grid. So this is, you know, some of the things you keep in mind as you're looking for places to relocate in the Southwest, because it's a lot more land. It's a lot more, heck, we don't even know you're there, don't care. You know, it's a lot more. Well, what happens, we've gone through this. We've had people that have been attacked in Coconino County. We followed a family that built a cabin. They went up, but there was a mistake. They were totally off-grid, enjoying the life of what, and then off in the distance, you know, a mile away or so, they could see a property, a guy that had a bunch of RVs and 18-wheeler trailers and so on, kind of mess up his property. So what did they do? And he wanted our help, and we got it all out, and it kind of lost a lot of enthusiasm when we found out all their problems started when they called the man to tell their neighbor way over there to clean up their property. You called the man, they go, really? Oh, we didn't know you were there. Hello! And you should be condemned because of hello, and you need to pay a hello. And I'm going, you bring the man in, what did you think was going to happen? So we have people that are of the mindset, nah, we're not going to bring in the man. We don't have to have power. We don't have to have wells. We don't have to have water. We don't have to. We can just go up on the high desert and some rainfall, and kind of we'll take care of business ourselves and earth ships. You know? So I'm going, all right. All right, so went looking, you know, Donna, you know, help us out, man. What were we seeing out in the middle of the Lone Prairie here in Arizona? Something that interested anybody?
Yeah, there were several properties that were of interest to these people. But, you know, even with the understanding that even though you want to be completely off-grid with your water and your electricity, the man is still going to visit you if he wants to. And even if you don't have any, you know, he's under the impression that if you have a complaint from somebody, that's the only time that they can come on your property to investigate. And we all know that they don't follow their own laws. And if they feel like getting you because you're being a butthead about something, they're going to come after you. But we did see a lot of nice properties up there. It's high desert. In the wintertime, it does snow. There's enough rain to collect enough rainwater to supply probably their needs. I don't know about how big they want to go with it.
Yeah, see, here in Arizona, you know, you can collect the rainwater off the roof of your dwelling or something. But if it's, you know, on your land, kind of, you want to do a cistern of the lake, not allowed.
Well, I need to learn more about earthships because they apparently it's all natural things and they have different designs.
For residential, just kind of use, you got plenty of water. You know, people do it here in Tucson, not a problem. It's for agriculture or livestock. You know, if you really want to have a lot of water, you either better have it, you know, ship it in, pipe it in, got it in, under the ground in, whatever, or well or something. If you're in certain areas of Arizona, there's a lot of water in a lot of places. But if you're in that place, you know, it's thousands of feet down. Maybe you'll get, maybe. I don't know, magma.
Doubt it.
You know?
Doubt it. Who's going to put the money? It's going to be more expensive to drill a well that deep than the land is most likely worth. So it's nobody's going to do that. Nobody hauls water up there. I mean, nobody has municipal services pretty much in the rural areas like
so
that. They all haul the water. They have big water tanks, and they pay trucks to come in and fill their water tanks.
And definitely aquaponics, so you don't use that much water.
I need to know. Yeah, definitely aquaponics. That would be a great thing. But the airships, I think, are very ergonomic, from my understanding. And then also, if you want to put a septic in, I have to check on that because I'm not really sure what kind of water supply or maybe none that
dry
they require
compost.
For that.
Compost,
yeah, well,
sawdust, bite me. I use it as dirt on my own, and I
and
eat it.
One of the properties, the electricity is right at the property, right on the corner. There's a power pole.
Well, then you might as well say hello to the man.
Exactly, and so they may want to hook into the system, and I go, just be mindful. They will come in and say, well, you need to be up to code to this if that's what you want to do.
Well, you have one little acre of the however many acres. You know, these are 40, 60, 70-acre parcels. But you go, you get 1 acre, that's where the power comes in. Yeah, go regulate that guy all you want, and where it goes from there, we don't tell you.
It's an experiment, and if it just gets to be too much and the man is just in their face too much and they can't do what they want to do, they're prepared to walk away. Okay, so, but, you know, and documenting the whole thing, it's like, okay, this is exactly what you're up against. When you want to go be by yourself, live by yourself, not bother anybody, be friendly to the earth, oh my God, I mean, which is what they espouse all the time, then they come and they bug you because they want you to bow to them, and that's what it's all about, is they're, you know, that kind of thing.
Now, back here in San Luis, Colorado, last week, tensions reached a boiling point as a scheduled county commissioners meeting in Colorado there turned into an ugly shouting match between sheriff deputies and off-grid homesteaders. The conflict comes as the county is attempting to ban camping and force off-grid homeowners back onto the grid. Now, this is this, you know, tiny house thing, and I'm wondering, you know, what is the difference between camping, a dwelling, it's mobile, it's not, because that's what this, you know, tiny house nation thing was all about, was to be able, well, it's not a permanent structure, we're just kind of camping. We got to change the law, you know, you're not allowed to be free. This is, it's a philosophical thing. You know,
it doesn't matter what you do. They're going to make a law so that they can come and tell you what you want to do, what they want you to do. I don't know, it's that simple. You know, you and I know that. It's just how it is.
Yeah, see, one of the guys gets up, a guy named Paul Skinner, and he addresses the commissioners. He said, "We are residents who have gone to live off the grid. It's all our land. These are harsh economic times. We have nowhere to go. We've been regulated out of life," resident Robin Rutan told CPR. Now, what's CPR? Is off-grid, you know, the magazine, I guess. "I came here because I couldn't live by the codes in other regions. One of the issues that is causing the biggest outcry is the county's refusal to issue camping permits, which the county is now requiring residents have if they are living in an RV or camp-style home." It's license, regulate. Somebody went down and asked permission and was told no.
Camping permit. Boy, do I feel safer now.
Oh, yeah, it's revolution. How are we going to do this? Well, we'll keep track of it. That's one thing.
Are you tired of governments around the world killing innocent people? Stop using their money. There is an alternative. Bitcoin is a stateless, free market, non-political currency. Bitcoin is money that cannot be inflated or controlled by any state. By continuing to use their money, you're perpetuating the killing. Stop doing it. You have an incredible alternative available to you now. Learn it, use it, spread it.
Get started with Bitcoin at Bitcoin.com. It's Bitcoin.com.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Come back. I'm not done, you know, with this. As I'm looking more at this, I can just see, man, there is a war on the individual not being on the grid of the, you're not allowed.
you know, and I'm damn, you know, because we have gone and talked to legislators, congressmen. We've been involved in, you know, a lot of things for a long time. We've actually talked to different county supervisors. They call them here in Arizona. I know some of them. We've been dealing with them for years. We ask these very questions. I just, you know, my main focus is I go like this. Is there a place that we can go to where we can just be left alone? I mean, we're not bothering anybody. It's kind of that. Well, you know, they conjure up some kind of reason how the planet is disturbed because you didn't get a permit or something. They just got to make sure. And I'm going, the Earthship guys in Taos, New Mexico, they have, and it really started with used tires. They just take and pack it with, I mean, you got a steel belted circular tubing, super interlaced, kind of not going anywhere, basement wall, and then you can stucco it over and whatever the heck you want to do. But I mean, this is creates a really good foundation for building a lot of these earth ships. And what they're talking about is they're self-sustaining, self-heating, self, you know, ergonomic, environmentally friendly. You think that government man would want to do that. And what they've done, it's been 30 years. And this guy, we need to get him on. You know, we'll go ahead and make an attempt to get that. It was Roland or something, I think his name is. And his whole point was, we're building these, and everything that the government's saying, you know, low carbon footprint of low little itty bitty being good to the nature, and kind of here we are. No, you're not allowed building permits. You didn't get the right, and we didn't engineering, you know, schematics of the kind of. And I'm going, if we do something and we go somewhere, is part of, you know, most of our effort going to be to try and change the laws, make it legal? They're just did, you know.
Survive. I mean, we've already done our part as far as educating people, and I'm sure we'll still continue the site and probably the radio show. But I think we've already have a lot of things that we are knowledgeable on, and it's all so that we can survive this thing. We do need to learn how to garden more on a bigger scale, I think, so that we can have more of a percent of our food come from what we grow and not the grocery store. That's kind of my goal anyway.
You know, Bob Anderson and I, it's been, you know, we had our daughter bought a house over 2 weeks every spare moment doing that. Then we had the grandkids for, you know, half a week, you know, you're dealing with that. And then we went to the camping thing, you know, forest wedding, we were dealing with that. Then we go, you know, so I'm just kind of, finally, I just yesterday, you know, I had the day off and you were up in northern Arizona part doing the research up there. And I'm going, you know, I got to finish Rhea's, my oldest child, her family's freaking aquaponics thing. So Bob and I were out there and we're just, you know, we had it all set up and got all the plumbing done and everything. And now I got to pull the trigger, man. I just got to, you know, like,
you know what?
Drill the holes and actually put it together. And I was afraid. And boom. And we made the decision and how we configured it. And I'm learning a lot, you know, on the, how to make these units more modular and high production. So Rhea's going to come out really good in this aquaponics
thing. Yeah, it's going to be good. We'll probably get it in there this week. We can just, I'm filling up the water now, which reminds me I have to go check it. But
it's overthrow flowing.
Doubt it. It's a lot of water. But, you know, one step at a time. The next step is to make sure that it's working and the way that you want. And a step after that is get it on the trailer and get it over there, because it's all, you know, it's October. It's time to start planting in Arizona. This is the time to plant before it gets too cold. You want that growing season.
Yeah,
and we got to figure out a way.
Right about now. I mean, it's
was like
it's
14
now.
Days ago, 2 weeks ago.
Well, but I told her to get the plants and start them and get them ready.
Yeah, me and her are going to go this. We'll go this week and we'll get them. And then I got to get my own too, and I have to put them in there. I need to put them in there this week.
Yeah, we had to clean out all our bed. You know, after years of running this, just the roots are like. I mean, we got to clean it out.
But it's ready. It's time. And the thing is that before it gets cold and you lose all your fish again, that's one thing we got to deal with, is how are we going to keep her fish warm enough to survive? And how are we going to keep
our
wood?
We're going to styrofoam. We're going to, it's a big IBT, whatever those big.
IBC tote.
Yeah, whatever they're. We're wrapping it in styrofoam, you know, boards, and then put vinyl around to kind of make it look pretty and so on, kind of insulate a little bit. And so there's things that we can do, and we'll do some solar heating. You know, Bob's, you know, got that pimped out. And the one thing that Bob's all Mr. Engineered and got every little hose and pipe going to the right and kind of, and it's so, he's got it really tight. And I go, nope. We're going to make it big, giant valves out and where I can get to it and stuff, and I don't want to stress it and kind of climb over crap. So we're kind of designing this to make it a little easier. What he was going for is how much crap can he put in his greenhouse? Well, he did it, but it's like damn, it's kind of a tight squeeze for old guys to get down on their hand. But he's got everything set up. So it's we're looking forward to this. So we have this capability of using little water. We can start, when they start going to Tesla Powerwalls, we've got enough solar generation. It's all about the storage, you know, for nighttime. And so that's coming online. I'm thinking within, 3 to 5 years, your electric car, the X, comes out today. Tesla Model X, a little SUV. And it's supposed to be like $35,000. And I'm going, well, I get a car and that's the battery for my house at night. And a car, I didn't have to buy a Powerwall. Buy me a car. And I'm going, So this is, there's a lot of things that are happening. You just need the space. Well, I think the man knows that. Oh, they're moving into tiny houses. They're camping. They're out off the grid. They're not in control. If you're not in control, you're out of control. You're out of control. So this is, are they seeing it kind of as a, just, we're just going to do it and survive anyway, get over it? Or they want to make it a political statement? Or they...
A little bit of both. I think that they, I mean, they know what they're up against, but they're going to go ahead and make this effort to do, to make this functional for them and to learn something in the process and to also teach others. But they know that eventually they are probably going to get a knock or something. They're going to have somebody come on their property that is not welcome. And then what they do...
So how'd you make it pass a guard dog?
Yeah, and what they do from there, I'm sure it'll be peaceful because I know these people and it won't escalate into anything, but it will be educational. So stay tuned.
Yeah, no, I'm okay. And they brought to Arizona. Hello.
It's going to be fun.
Hello. Well, I'm glad you're working with them, you know, because that's, you know, what Donna does. You know, that's her thing. You know, she, you know, kick ass on, man. She takes care of business when it comes to real estate. So we're going to go ahead and that's the kind of thing I'd be interested in because I'm not, I really had this conversation with my youngest daughter. They had to buy a house. And I'm going, you know, because they could, they got what they wanted, they didn't pay, you know, exorbitant amount of money, but, you know, it's going to be worth less, you know, as time goes on here and less inflation. I mean, you don't know, but I'm just going, God, I mean, you'd be better off the rent, you know, and just like, so everybody go, you let one of your kids buy a house now? Oh, my God. I go, hey, man, you I had this conversation. I'm sorry.
What are you going to do? Force them not to? I mean, how libertarian is that? They just have to have all the facts.
I know. They go, we know. We don't care.
You can't make them not do it. I mean, they know. But
20-year-olds.
But you know what? Not everybody's priority is the same as theirs. They had a particular priority, and they took care of business.
Yeah, it's to go in debt. It wasn't to go in debt.
They have a plan to even do that in half the time. So they're making an effort to make that happen.
All right.
Whether I agree with it or not is not
your
the point.
Your faults as a child is my failure as a parent. Yeah, we just watched
Gladiator
last night.
We're always going to be there. We're always going to be there for him. So.
Well, yeah, I fell asleep during Gladiator last night.
Well, of course I did too, because I'm exhausted.
Yeah, no, she was tired. You know, we haven't watched Gladiator for a long time, and usually we used to watch that like every month or something, you know, for a while. And then we got Roku. But the, I had to go to Cox yesterday and get a new modem.
Yeah, we got to deal with this.
$140 for the new modem of the Better to Surveil Me bot. And I go, this thing better be freaking whiz-bang, I tell you. You know, it's a, we're like 100 megabyte download and about 35 or something upload. So that's, you know, we're getting some, you know, is the computer's going faster today?
A little, but it's because my computer's not very fast.
Why is it? Windows?
Because it has a lot of things on it.
Well, it's the way you, Yeah, we'll be right back.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started. started today.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Wait a minute, baby. Stay with me, why? Said you give me love, but you never told me about the fire.
Oh, Tesla X is coming online. What does that mean? Oh, we're going to talk about it. Oh, and the Dieselgate from VW, the world's largest automaker. We're back here on Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock. All right, let me give you, you know, the headlines of what's up, what's up, what's up. This is something that's near and dear to me. We've been following electric cars. I tell you my biggest motivation. I mean, you know, cost and maintenance, and it's going to be easier to, you know, fortunately, you'd be able to generate your own fuel with solar panels, and the car becomes the battery for your house. Heck, I mean, you know, why not? The, you know, I need the extra uber-duber super battery of the long 5,000-mile range of that because I'm going to use it for my house. So, you know, there's a lot of motivation for this, but I tell you one of the biggest things is that it's just it bypasses all the crap in the maintenance. I mean, I am so sick of working on cars and having greasy fingers and stuff all the time. And now it's, you know, I always wear the blue gloves and I put on some mechanic gloves and everything. I was just sick of having grease in my fingernails that last a week, you know, all the time. And then you get the new jack. You know, I just bought Harbor Freight. You know, they had a 3-ton jack for $84.99. So I said, done. They go, do you want the extended warranty after the years? I go, hey, man, I'm only going to use that thing like 6 times in the next year. If it goes bad, I don't want another one. So it's like $20, $30 for the extended warranty. I go, can it work 6 times? I mean, come on, seriously. So this is, I'm so sick of working on cars. Now it's kind of, now I'm at the point to where my grandchildren, you know, do I start teaching them? I mean, yeah, they went out there when I was doing the alternator. Oh, well, look, this is what grandpa's got to do. You see that thing there? I got it. You know, here, you guys ride your tricycle here on the carport while I do this, and I'll show you different stages of whatever. And I did that with my children when we were changing oil or something. At 6 years old, they knew what an extension was. They know what a ratchet is. Give me a, you know, 14 millimeter or a 9/16 of the yada, 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 and then see, look at the numbers. And got, so they got, you know, my daughter, when she got her first car, it was a little Dodge Neon piece of crap. And I'm going, hey, you know, you need to change the brakes. Let me tell you, disc brakes are simple, Simon. Come over here. I'll give you the muscle and kind of take the lug nuts off. But, you know, you're going to learn how to do your own damn brakes. You know, so we do that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's right. Electric cars probably still have brakes. No! Regenerative braking. So I'm going, all right, so we learned this. So now, am I teaching my grandchildren to do gasoline-powered cars? Are we going to learn all that? I guess probably. You know, they're still going to, you know, probably dominate their lives for a little bit, but maybe by the time they're driving at 16, it's going to be, what's wrong with your car? Why? I don't know, my battery's dead, the connection is not there, the motor got burned out, or that's about it. I mean, you know, I'm you get rid of all this, which is where the auto industry is making its money. When you have quality cars come in, and General Motors, it's just, you know, we had an auto detailing company, you know, we still have. I mean, we still have clients that, you know, Donna, you know, works with on a regular basis. And when they ever, you know, some of my old clients say, oh, I need to have the wet nail polish finish on my new Lamborghini that got messed up, Ernie, come fix it. I go, the answer is always yes. It's just how much? Yeah, it'll be $300. I'll take care of that for you. Because I've done thousands of cars. And it's just over the years, it's called Motivity Auto Detailing. Now, we had different services. We had concierge services. We had a laundry service and the auto dealing, detailing service. We were expanding the other. Then we got involved in, you know, activism and so on. But the I've sat in and detailed every little bitty old thing on the outside and inside of hundreds of car makes, thousands of automobiles. And I looked at, I tell you when I really, I mean, a tear came to my eye, literally.
I went to a car show in the late 80s, I think it was, when they introduced the Lexus. When the Lexus came out, it was half the price as some of the other luxury automobiles, and certainly cheaper even than the Cadillacs. And I go, we are freaking toast. Because at that time, they had just came out with the Cadillac Cimarron, which was a glorified Pontiac piece of crap. You look at $70,000, $50,000 to $70,000, depending on how you pipped it out, of a Corvette, and you knew as a Pontiac door panel getting loose, going to fall off, piece of crap. I'm going, who does, what the hell, and what do? The big three would use Congress to protect them from the evils of a VW bugs. That didn't, nope, they can't pass the crash test. We got to get it done in the bumper and the kind of the crash test kind of eliminate, and you're not allowed, and where's your airbag? So when finally the new VW bug came in, it had to have all the safety stuff, and I'm going, you know, it took away the freedom of me being able to buy a reliable, inexpensive Volkswagen, you know, the people's car. You know, a little VW bug, man, those things are awesome. We used to have one. We had it for, you know, a pizza restaurant. We parked, painted it, logoed it, and parked it out front. And, you know, everybody always commented on it. We'd deliver pizzas and that, go pick the kids up from school. They'd be like, oh, the belly bug, man. You know, all right. Ah, bulletproof. Well, that's probably my third or fourth coffee. Can you tell? So I'm going, all right. When this diesel thing came up, this, what is it? VW gate or something that's going on now. Now, the U.S. government, they knew. They're just punishing Germany for something, probably because they want to leave NATO. You know, they're going, oh, yeah, well, you're going to lose our market. And we're going to you know, slap you around. Well, I'm sure there was some kind of, you know, while I was driving, not driving, and they did it software on purpose to get past EPA kind of something or whatever. But I tell you, this is how bad it is and why there was a problem. I don't have any sympathy towards EPA. There was about 4 years ago or so, there was a big controversy to where an engine called the, I don't know, whatever it was, the TC, who gives a crap. There was an engine that was made here in America that they exported to like Brazil and Europe and so on, that was a Volkswagen engine that went into their, I don't know, Passat or whatever the heck it was. And somebody went to Europe, and they sell fuel by the liter there. Well, he did a conversion, and he's finding out in this diesel VW that he had that was available in Europe, that he's getting 60 miles to the gallon or so, 60, 70 miles to the gallon as they're touring around Europe. And he goes, what the heck? I freaking want this car. Damn. I like this car. I get the America. I want that car. He goes and he says, I want that car. Well, his VW dealer there said, oh, I'm sorry, you can't have that car. Why? You know, where's it made? What's the deal? Oh, no, the engine's made here in America, but you can't buy it in America in American versions of the VW cars. Okay? Pray tell, why? Was it, you know, emission thing? Well, it's how they measured emissions. They said, how much pollutants does it put into the air per gallon? Okay. Well, it was a little higher than some of the standard, but it was lower if you went per mile. Now, over the, because you got a lot more energy usage out of the gallon of gas, you went further. You get 60, 70 miles to the gallon. So as you're doing, you're going, hold on, a diesel with some peppy kind of man rocking and rolling and whatnot? But that's not how they tested it. The EPA, in order to eliminate competition, you're not, hell no, the energy industry of the, you know, it's all about the oil of the kind of, because they can, they set the testing criteria. It was per gallon pollutant, not per mile. So it polluted less if you went by the mile. But that's not what they did. They did it by the gallon. Why? Because they can. Did that mean less pollutants per driving? No, it was more. But it's how they tested it. This is, I remember that discussion years ago. So what did they have to do? They tried to get more higher performance of these better engines that people were demanding. You know, so they're going, yeah, we know we got a market. You got high, you know, mileage, and you have better emissions and so on. But the way they test, so they tweak the software in there so that it would pass emission. You get a bit more, you know, environmentally friendly, better capability, better performance vehicle. So I think that's what's going to come out of this. As I'm looking at it, I can see, I'm going, ow. So you pay attention to this, VW game. But who's taking advantage of this? Model X Tesla. You go, you know what? None of that stuff matters. We got an electric car. It's got a 300-mile range. Gets charged our supercharger in 20 minutes. Kind of got doors available for a soccer mom. Oh, and it's down in the 30,000 something of a luxury kiss my butt. This is, and what would I do? Why would I want to buy this? I mean, at some point, they're going to get used. get to where, hey, man, this could be the battery bank for my home that's powered by solar. And you have a way more in the one car of a lithium ion amp hour storage than you would buy in there. Heck, even a Tesla wall. So I'm going, so you mean you buy a couple electric cars, they are the battery for your home, and you get free energy transportation solar? Here it comes.